Good evening, everybody. It's June 19th, 2017 at 9:09 p.m. This is our Monday night call for NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Welcome, everybody. We got a lot. We're a little late, but it's no big deal. We got a lot to cover tonight. What I started to say was we received paperwork back from the Third District Court, and I don't know if everybody knows it, but the judge jumped up and dismissed the case, made a decision in order to throw us out because he said that we are an association and we cannot come in without an attorney. And, you know, they always want to give you these names and make you some kind of corporate entity. So he doesn't recognize us as the people, but, you know, so now we're going to give him a writ of error because he wasn't even the judge that was on this case. This judge that came in, and we actually had a magistrate, and this judge came in and made this decision. And I don't know if I think we put it up, but if you read his decision, he said, we were asked to look this over and make a ruling. Well, if they asked him to do anything, first of all, he wasn't the judge assigned to the case. And if they asked him to do something, they should have filed a motion in the case. They shouldn't be sending ex parte letters to the chief judge when the magistrate that's running the case, that's seeing the paperwork come in and out, hasn't said anything. And then the guy on the top comes and they've already accepted our case based on the parameters that we put in, that this is common law, that the judge is not to make any decision. This was all put out in memorandums. They can't say they didn't know it, right? So now he's going to come in and say, oh, no, you know, you're not an attorney. You can't come in. Well, that's a mistake because, you know, right away they do the knee-jerk thing that's really going to, you know, discredit them in the long run. So we have a paper that John wrote in response to that. And that's, you know, most of the time in these things, you know, you do a lot of counterpunching and, you know, tell you the truth, you know, when they punch, you always want to know, you know, every time they punch us, it lets us know, you know, exactly where they're coming from. Not that we don't know, but, you know, they put up a tack that we go, oh, yeah, we've seen that before. You know what I mean? So it's always easier, I think, to counterpunch unless you got them dead to rights, then you go right for the jugular vein. You know what I mean? So without further ado, I'm going to read this writ of error here that John wrote. And it's the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York. And if you didn't get the judge's letter, boy, it's worth reading because he did we pick his letter apart and the stuff that he says. But anyway, I'm going to start this writ of error, and then we'll go back, and maybe I'll even let people see the judge's letter, and they can comment on that. Writ of error, quorum nobis. The court comes now to review the facts, record, and process. The record shows that on June 14, 2017, without any constitutional authority, self-appointed U.S. District Judge Lawrence E. Kahn, ignoring the random selection process of Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart to this case, he conducted his own court without notice or concurrence of the parties, without notice to the administrator, Magistrate Daniel J. Stewart, without jurisdiction, without due process, and under color of law, and acted in an attempt to seize control of this court, an act of a tyrant, by manufacturing an unlawful order to dismiss this action without prejudice, thereby aiding and abetting the covering up of murder, torture, manipulation of evidence, witnesses and juries in order to incarcerate innocent people who are threatening to expose judicial law and law enforcement corruption and RICO on a national level. Conspiracy to supplant the law of the land with statutes, thereby replacing our republic with corporatism. Political incarcerations, covering up of murder of inventors who are a threat to corporate profits. So covering up the murder of inventors who are a threat to corporate profits, like guys that make cars run on 200 or more miles to the gallon. That type of stuff. That's what that means. Denying due process, robbing people's homes and estates, taking people's children, running debtors' prison, covering up and protecting pedophile rings, etc. The genius of a court of record is not to be undermined. It is the unalienable right of every American to settle a criminal case in a court of record. Federal district courts are creatures of Congress, inferior to the one Supreme Court, which is vested by we the people, ourselves, through the Constitution for the United States of America. Federal district court judges hold their office during good behavior, that is to say, obedience to the one Supreme Court, under Article 3, Section 1, and the Law of the Land. Under Article 6, Clause 2, the unalienable right of free access to people's courts is a settled law that all judges are bound by oath to obey. If self-appointed U.S. District Judge Lawrence E. Kahn read our papers, he would understand that, like the other unjust courts he presides over, this is an Article 3 court in which indictments will be filed and criminal cases will be tried. We the people are acting as grand juries to indict people that the corrupt judiciary will not, whereby untainted trial juries will preside over the U.S. Attorney General, will be providing a U.S. prosecutors, or approve a special common law prosecutor. Nevertheless, the Sixth Amendment provides for assistance of counsel for defense, not bar or attorney counsel. Judge Lawrence E. Kahn would also understand that we are not a corporation, a partnership, or an association. We are the people under the authority of the grand jury because all federal juries have been seized by the judiciary. Quote, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by impartial jury of the state and the district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. And that's the Bill of Rights, Amendment 6. Self-appointed Judge Lawrence E. Kahn made it clear by his actions that he believed that he was the owner of the courtroom, not we the people. He was not satisfied with the lawful rules of the courts. He became a loose cannon and imposed his own rules and the rules of another jurisdiction foreign to this court of record. Papers concerning numerous felonies such as subversion against the United States of America, murder, kidnapping, false imprisonment, pedophilia, etc., has been filed in this case. The law provides that the judiciary is to respond and not conceal as an attempted by Judge Lawrence E. Kahn, who is now in jeopardy of indictment in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 4, 18 U.S.C. and subsection 1001, felony rescue. Furthermore, elected and appointed officials have a duty to speak, and we the people have an unalienable right of redress and remedy. This court will not permit one rogue judge to subvert that unalienable right of due process. Furthermore, without proper authority, self-appointed Judge Lawrence E. Kahn trespassed upon the case and by his actions and statement figuratively assumed the cloaks of a tribunal. The record shows that the rules of court were not followed, that self-appointed Judge Lawrence E. Kahn attempted to function as a tribunal, and that the court was ineffective in furthering the goal of justice for all. These failures follow the prescribed procedures are these failures to follow the prescribed procedures are sufficiently disrupted to the goal of providing fair justice in that the sovereigns of the court find it necessary to issue a writ of error quorum nobis as follows. The sovereigns of the courts, having reviewed the facts, the record, and the process by which the ruling was issued, and finding that Judge Lawrence E. Kahn rendered a ruling under color of law by seizing control and applying rules from jurisdictions foreign to this court without leave of court, and finding that the orderly decorum of the court was replaced by defective impromptu process and usurpation of legislative and court powers without leave of court. Well, there's a mouthful. American jurisprudence, which is constitutional law, subsection 326, free justice and open courts, remedy for all injuries. In most of the state constitutions, there are provisions varying slightly in terms which stipulate that justice shall be administered to all without delay or denial, without the sale or prejudice, and that the court shall always be open to all alike. These provisions are based largely upon the Magna Carta, Chapter 40, which provides, we will sell to no man, we will not deny to any man, either justice or right. The chief purpose of the Magna Carta provision was to prohibit the king from selling justice by imposing fees on litigants through his courts and to deal a death blow to the attendant venal and disgraceful practices of a corrupt judiciary in demanding oppressive gratuities for giving or withholding decisions in pending cases. It has been appropriately said that in a free government, the doors of litigation are already wide open and must constantly remain so. The extent of the constitutional provision has been regarded as broader than the original confines of the Magna Carta, and such constitutional provision has been held to prohibit the selling of justice, not merely by magistrate, but by the state itself. Therefore, a denial of access into the people's courts of justice for refusing to pay a fee would be a violation of the plaintiff's unalienable right of due process protected under the Fifth Amendment. The court impeaches and rescinds the statement by Judge Lawrence E. Kahn that he did make a decision and order, and this court orders the Judge Lawrence E. Kahn to cease and desist from assuming the role of a tribunal. That's all in capital letters, by the way, which in typing means you're screaming. But anyway, the court would like to reiterate the following information and memorandums that define the process and rules of this Article III Court of Record. Number one, information brief clarifying this extraordinary proceeding. These are things we sent to them now. Number two, memorandum of facts, stating what the case was, the facts. Memorandum of law in support of the authority of the grand jury. Memorandum of law in supporting of standing. Memorandum of jury tampering and stacking. Memorandum of law in support of understanding our founding documents. Memorandum of law in support of the common law. Memorandum of law in support of Article III courts. Our statement of jurisdiction, number nine. Number 10, jurisdiction notice to the magistrate. We put them on notice as to what this jurisdiction was and where it comes from. And 11 was memorandum in support of jurisdiction. Therefore, the sovereigns of this court of record, reminding all officers of the court record that any statute or rule repugnant to the Constitution is null and void in a court of record, and thereby issues this writ of error quorum nobis, to wit, reversing the order by Judge Lawrence E. Kahn of the inferior court, not of record, from jurisdictions unknown, thereby returning the court back to the tribunal, dated June 19, 2017, signed by the grand jury foreman. It was not an attorney, heaven forbid. So, anyway, that's the response. It's got lots of footnotes. It's pretty. I don't know if John has posted it yet. I don't know. I just got it in my box, and I did. That's what's the final one. I didn't have a chance to read it before I read it, so I apologize if I made any stumbles there. But anyway, it's going to get interesting, folks. It's going to get real interesting. And we got to get ready to step up to the plate because this battle is heating up. Now, look at, they're sending things out, and we're sending back stuff. And them be fighting words. I mean, things ain't real nice right now because we're fighting with them. So we have to expect a fight from them, and we have to be up for it. And so that means, you know, we fire back the way we do, and we stick to our guns. And it means that we have to be in solidarity with each other. We also have to be a force of one. I'm giving you a pep talk in case you didn't realize. But it's going to be real important in the next few weeks that we are really doing those things that make NLA what we claim to be. And, of course, look, we have to roll with the punches. Everybody's got a life to lead. There's crazy stuff going on. You know, people dying, people this, and you got to go through your life, but you have to make time also to fight this battle, because otherwise we won't even get the first lick at it. And of course, we know they're squeezing us so that we don't have the time, the energy, the gumption to fight them. But by well, look, if we got this far, we're going to take it to the end at this point, believe me. And better to go down fighting, I think, and especially this way. This is the way we can fight with the pen, and this is the way we should fight, And people thought that there was nothing to be done out west. They did all their redresses of grievance. You know, they hired their attorneys. They did the best they could. They threw money at it. But when the government wants a specific outcome-based result, it doesn't matter what you do. And, I watched that series. I don't remember what it is. I don't know if somebody can help me, Jan or Ollie, American, what was it? Which was a documentary of what happened in the Malheur thing. And let me see, it was, at any rate, the attorneys are in there talking, and the one attorney said, look, you don't ever get out of a federal court with an acquittal, ever, because they don't allow it to happen. So they were amazed that it actually happened. You got to watch it. I'll get you the guy's name before the show is over. Really good stuff, and it's I don't know, it's like 8 parts or whatever. But I only watched that one 15-minute part on the two attorneys talking about the results, and I'll tell you what, it was good, and it was accurate, and it was a documentary done by a big, network media company, very professionally done. But anyway, that was very powerful. So this is where we're at. We need to do those things that we need to do now as we bring this paperwork forward. We need to get the word out. Ollie and I and a few other people out there like Terry and all those, we're going to work real hard on getting NLA News and our YouTube channels cooking and our social media. And you guys should be too. Anybody out there that knows social media or likes it or is on it all the time, you should be liking and sharing this stuff so it goes all over the place, And eventually they'll give us trouble. They'll try to take our stuff down. They always do. But we got some people that know how to deal with that too. We got some really good people on NLA that understand these systems because they grew up in them and they were working in them up through college and stuff. So we're starting to glean some of that stuff. So when it gets to the point that they're getting to the point that you can't get stuff out, we have the methodology. We'll teach you how to put that stuff where they can't get rid of it and where it goes out before they can get rid of it and that type of stuff. And these are the things we need to be doing because these are our tools. Like it or not, as much as I hate Facebook and I want to be on there, it's still a tool, And so you use what's in your toolbox until it's wore out and then you throw it away. So I'd be happy to throw Facebook away the first chance I get, but somebody got to build something else that works as well and goes as far. So that being said, we won't get lost in that. I'm gonna open up a Q&A. And that's kind of how we're gonna. Oh, actually, we'll get Brent go first. Somebody also asked about. Well, I think Brent's done with the militia stuff, but there's a. Inform New Hampshire, John and I are going to do an interview on that. And some of the people over there are interested in militia. And Brent has gone through all the militia clauses, and those are all on whatever it is that we put them on, but you can listen to them. You can go back and listen to them. But if somebody wants to ask a question that is of that ilk from over there in New Hampshire, and there's something that they don't understand, and believe me, ask it while you have Brent on the line, because Brent wrote the book on the subject. And, we've been up and down, and we worked it between what he did and what we're doing. And I think we're very accurate, and I trust Brent implicitly in his research. And, we've discovered some things along the way together, NLA and Brent. You never stop learning with this stuff, You always pick up more, and if you're not, then it's because, you're getting old and senile and you can't keep your mind together anymore. Anyway, I didn't mean to talk about you like that there. I'm not going to say the name. But anyway, is Brent in here? Can anybody see? Because I don't want to get going too long.
Yeah, I don't see him.
I'm here.
Okay.
Are you there, Gerard?
Yes, I am.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm getting my microphone up. Sorry. There, you can probably hear me better now. Can you?
I hear you good. You sound wall to wall, tree top tall. You know what? I think I forgot to read my Bible passages tonight, being all miscombobulated, didn't I?
Well, yeah. You
know what?
Go ahead and do that. Yeah.
I put it down. Lost my page. Where is my Bible? I am so miscombobulated here. Well, hang on there just a second. You know what, Brent? You're going to have to take off because I lost
okay.
what I wanted to read. And I don't want
okay.
to just pick willy-nilly, okay?
All right. No, I'll take off. We'll try to start where we left off last time. We're in the Declaration of 76, and I'd like to point out that I'm careful not to call it the Declaration of Independence because that's not what it calls itself, and those words aren't found in the document, and it's rather odd, I suppose, odd, curious that we've attached that to it because that's not what it is. It's not a Declaration of Independence. It's a Declaration of Shifting Dependence. Our country shifted dependence from the Crown of England to the Supreme Judge of all the world and the Creator of all things. We got along in our discussion of the Declaration of 76, we were in paragraph 2. Paragraph 2, that paragraph says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And we talked about the consent of the governed. We're a government. We're a people that are governed by our consent. And we said that just powers are those powers of government to which the governed, that's us, have consented. That's a just power. Unjust powers are those powers of government to which the governed have never consented. But to milk that out just a little further and say it this way, just powers are those that the governed had a right before giving them the government. If you didn't have a right to do what government's doing right now, if you never could have had that right, then government doesn't have it either, because every right that government has, if it's a true right, is derived from you. The common law, our common law, lodges such consent most powerfully in the grand and petit juries. The grand jury is the jury of indictment, the jury of snatching someone by the foot and holding him. That's what indictment is, impeachment, as we call it. Holding him for trial, and the petit jury is the one that says yes to the government. You may take this man's life, liberty, or property, or combination thereof, or no, you may not. The grand jury says yes or no to trial. Yes, you may try this person. The petit jury, the trial jury, says or no, you may try this person. Either says yes or no. The petit jury says yes or no and for a different reason also. But again, that's the expression of the consent of the governed. And the jury are not representatives of the people. The jury are representative samples of the people. Very much different than the legislature. The legislature are representatives of the people. That's right. But a jury isn't. The jury member didn't fight for his position in the jury box. He didn't even look for it. Chances are he'd rather be home doing what he wants to do. He's impaneled on the spot. He does it because it's his duty. And he is not a representative of the people. He's a representative sample. He's a sampling. That's why jury members are drawn like straws are drawn. They're representative samples. So to sum up, just powers are those powers the governed could have rightly held and exercised before giving them to government. Unjust powers are those powers the governed could have never rightly held and exercised before giving them to government. We'll continue to paragraph 2. It says this, after that, it says this, prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for right and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. We are a people of custom. We are accustomed to eat, maybe some people are, I know they are. Some, they tell me, they're accustomed to eat at McDonald's. And no matter what city in the United States or what town or burg or where they're at on the interstate, they'll stop at McDonald's because they're accustomed to it, even though it has come out in the news that McDonald's was mixing horse meat with their hamburger. Yep, that's what I read. For what it's worth, I believe it. But they're accustomed to it, so they'll go back. If mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they're accustomed. People want to abolish McDonald's. They're accustomed to it. It's a part of Americana. So people like to eat there. Well, the same thing is true, of course, with abuses of government to people. People are more disposed to suffer. We are very patient as a people, and we put up with a lot. And then in the last election, some people snapped and said, we don't want to put up with this anymore. It's getting too ugly. Well, it's been ugly a long time, but at some point this has to end. And so they went to the ballot box, and they made a statement. And so now we have a regular blamed fight of immeasurable proportions going on within the government. Well, we didn't pick up the people that voted Trump into office, didn't pick up guns and pitchforks and knives and go after the other side. No, we suffer as long as evils are sufferable. We'll try voting first. So, by golly, we tried it two or three times before that. Didn't happen. Then this time it happened. Something happened. But I hasten to add that the other side, the wackos, the evil empire, the ones that aren't willing to try to throw off evil government by some peaceable means, are violent, murderous, hateful, dangerous, dirty people. They're haunted people. They have bats in their belfry, ants in their attic. And one fellow from Belleville, Illinois, which is across the river, for those that aren't from that part of the world, across the river from St. Louis, Missouri, he picked up a pistol and shot congressmen, some few other people. That's evil, very evil. By the way, assassination is not part of our common law, never has been. And in common law countries, assassination hasn't been the rule. But it's crept into our country, because of our foolishness of allowing the law of the city to be a part of our government. But, of course, we'd like to point out that all the rest of the world, which all the rest of it, almost all of it, is under some form of the Code of Justinian, the German form or the French form or the canon form. And under that system, if you go to those countries, you'll discover that assassination is part of their tradition of religion, law, and government. And they're constantly killing their leaders. South America, it's their favorite pastime, as one fellow said. And France, that's why Bastiat wrote the law. He was so tired of the revolving violence. That's what revolution is, revolving, never-ending violence. Our war for independence, in that sense, wasn't revolution, although it's called that. It wasn't revolving violence. It happened once, and it was done. And it was done to not take vengeance for the past, as all revolutions are. It was done to establish the future. Well, he's going to talk here about evils being sufferable. We have long patience, and this clause asserts no right of revolution. This clause that says mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, that gives us no right to revolution. Indeed, no man. In the sense I just described revolution, no man has a right to do that. It's wrong to take vengeance for the past. God himself tells us that vengeance belongs to him. That's the whole point of Romans chapter 13, that much maligned passage, the preceding verses in chapter 12. It's about vengeance belonging to God alone. Justice, so he gives that to us, the governments of men, to ensure that it happens, to establish, better establish to right things and make a better future, but never to avenge the past. To be sure, though, men do have unalienable rights. Inalienable, that means unalienable. Inalienable, the negative on the front doesn't make any difference which one you use. That means you can't be separated from your rights. Well, what are rights? Well, to review again, the reason you can't be separated from your rights is because your rights, the old Germanic word rights, are your duty, your responsibility that God gave you direct. And if God gave it to you direct, then it is non-delegable. You can't pass it off to somebody else. As Truman used to say, not to justify what he did, but just to make the point, he said the right thing. The buck stops here. It does stop with the man to whom delegated duty has been delegated. And that's why your we call these rights that are not delegatable, that have been given to you direct from God. We call these, in our common law tradition, fundamental rights, not civil rights. That's just man-made baloney. We're talking fundamental rights. And these are the rights that are not separatable from you. Indeed, God gave them to you, and if he gave them to you, he dropped them on you direct without any intermediary. There is no mediator between God and man. As Wycliffe pointed out, quoting the Bible, quoting the very words of the book of Hebrews, there is no mediator between God and man except the God-man, Christ Jesus. That's what the Bible teaches. That's what John Wycliffe tried to reiterate. Well, if that's true, then God gave them to you, then you can't get rid of them. No man can take them from you. And Jefferson and Madison and Hamilton, all these fellows that we talk about, the founders, they all said the same thing in different ways. You can't get rid of them yourself. You cannot, as they put it, divest yourself of your fundamental rights, because they are indeed duties given of God. Well, having such rights to alter or abolish a government that tries to get between you and your maker and tries to be the mediator that says it gave you the rights and you have them at their pleasure, and that's what governments try to do. Inevitably, they always try to do that. They get powerful enough. They try to say, well, you may have those rights, but you can't exercise them without our permission. Well, that's the same thing as saying that we have power over them. And we can take them away, but they can't. I don't care what they do to you. I don't care what you do. I don't care how irresponsible you become and how godless you may become. Shake your fist at God, you still can't get rid of those rights because they are duties. And you will answer for them someday. And any government that says that you exercise them at their pleasure is a liar. That's why we call them fundamental. And when governments do that, it says here, the people and their right. And they're right. The people have the right to alter or abolish that government. Now, such a right to alter and abolish government does not necessarily demand violent overthrow of government. Matter of fact, it doesn't demand it at all. And such an understanding is false. And to bar such a notion that it's that our declaration is acknowledging an absolute right to violence, to bar that notion, our declaration sets out a standard of nature's God for those, such as present-day Americans, such as us, living under oppression of tyranny, of government, usurpation of power. No question we live under today. It sets out a standard, the standard of nature's God. What is the standard? Long-suffering patience. I was told years ago that long-suffering means the ability to suffer long. And I suppose, in one way, long-suffering, if it's patience, you are willing to put up with a lot, to tolerate a lot for quite a while, and we all should be willing to do that. I had a client recently who was slapped on the buttocks. I'm trying to dress it up in nice words. Very forcibly, by the way, a very beautiful girl slapped in the workplace by her boss, right on the buttocks. And I talked to the attorney from the other side. I said, you know, this isn't right. He said, oh, yeah, we got a lot of laws against, sexual abuse in the workplace. I said, well, neither me nor my client care about all those laws. Matter of fact, we don't even care if somebody uses language that you would call sexual abuse. We don't care. We don't care what other oppression they may put on her. But this thing about a full force slap on the buttocks is, at common law, that's battery. It's actionable. And if it's hard enough, it's criminal battery. That's what I'm concerned about. I don't give two hoots and a holler about all your bureaucratic rules about sexual harassment. It means nothing to me, and I don't want to even talk about it. You want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about battery, because battery is the law of God. The law of nature is God. It's in the Bible, and it's good sense to recognize that another person doesn't have leave to touch another person without permission in an offensive manner. I don't care whether another person tries to kiss the girl or slap her on the buttocks. That's actionable under the laws of God. That's what we need to talk about. Well, our declaration is no revolutionary manifesto. In fact, neither the word revolution doesn't appear anywhere in the document, nor language hinting at a call to arms is not found. I want to repeat that. Language hinting at a call to arms is not found in our Declaration of 76. That's powerful by its absence. Now, to be sure, full-blown war did come, but it was not by the aggression of Americans, not by our aggression against England, Britain, I should say. The British forced war. And anyone who's diligently studied the subject would have to agree. And the evil empire now, today, the snowflakes, I don't know, whatever you call them, all these people that hate what is right in government, they're trying to force war. That's why you see them violent. You don't see the folk on the other side that are clamoring for constitutional government committing violence. You see the people who hate true government. They're the ones that are committing violence. And it's orchestrated with the intent to force war. Because the only way that the evil empire can advance is by murder, unlawful taking of property, and unlawful jailing of men. The taking, in short, of life, liberty, and property. Stand your ground, said Captain Parker on Lexington Green on the morning of 19 April 1775. Stand your ground, that's what he said. And then he said this, do not fire unless fired upon. I'm quoting. Stand your ground, do not fire unless fired upon. Then he said, let the British troops pass by and do not molest them without they begin first. That's a funny phrase. Do not molest them without they begin first, said Captain Parker. He didn't start the violence. They did not pass by. The British troops stopped and egged the fight. Well, by replacing our common law courts with admiralty tribunals, all for the ease of England's central bank mercantilism and trading monopolies, Britain removed any requirement for a search warrant and denied trial by jury. Yes, indeed, Britain said that the colonies were governed by admiralty law. They extended admiralty law from the high seas to the coastal waters, to the harbors, to the piers, to the warehouses on the piers, and then, by using the excuse of looking for contraband that was taken from the ships, they extended the admiralty law into the homes of English-speaking people in the American colonies. And they said that because admiralty law now applied to ships and the piers and the warehouses and now the homes, because see delivered contraband was in the homes, they removed the requirement for a search warrant to search homes and also denied trial by jury because at admiralty law, being a species of the law of the city, the civil law of Babylon, the law of the city, there is no trial by jury. There is no trial by jury in the rest of the world. Only in common law countries do we enjoy true trial by jury. Now, I know some people say there's trial by jury in some of the European countries, and some of them boast of it. But believe me, once the truth to jury in those countries that aren't common law countries, if there is a jury, it's window dressing, makes people feel good. And if the government, the state, the judge doesn't like what the jury said, they just overturn it. Well, consequently, in the British colonies, breaking and entering homes and businesses to seize personal belongings and to arrest those offensive to the Central Bank of London's monopolies, trading monopolies, well, it all became widespread. Sound familiar? Have you heard of people's homes being broken into without warrants? Flashbang grenades thrown into the cribs of babies, permanently injuring them for their lives? Busting into the wrong houses without a warrant, busting down the door, shooting people, shooting dogs, pets, cats. Well, that's what was happening in the colonies. But the Admiralty courts, being civil law tribunals and not common law courts, offered no real opportunity to correct government wrongs. Trial by jury was no longer a live option for the colonists. Consequently, the colonists could only meet force with like force or, the other choice, cower under forced association with the bankers' monopolies. You see, they weren't allowed to trade with anybody but who the government in England said they could trade with. And the only person, the only people they were allowed to trade with was the British East India Company. Nobody else. Well, that's against our common law because our common law abhors monopolies. I'm quoting Edward Coke on that point, the man who our founders quoted more than any other person, Edward Coke, champion of our common law. So they didn't want to trade. Well, again, is that anything like what we see today? Forced associations, the government Obamacare Act, forcing us to associate with insurance companies. Of course, that happened on the state level with the forcing association with automobile insurance companies. Nothing new, but it's wrong because it is not freedom of association to have to enter a contract relationship with somebody you don't choose to enter a contract relationship with. And the government will give you a list. These are the people that you have to have a contract relationship with. Well, that's what they were doing with the British East India Company, forcing everyone in the colonies to enter debtor-debtee relationships, that's a contract relationship, to buy goods and services. Our Declaration of 76's language reflects the phrases of John Locke, student of John Owen. John Owen and John Locke, Puritan and outlook, and preoccupied with the Bible. John Locke wrote a very lengthy commentary on the Bible, and he said, now John Locke, remember, was one of the three men that Tom Jefferson said were the greatest men that ever lived outside of Jesus Christ. John Locke was one of them, and he quoted Locke extensively. From his second treatise on government, he quoted him to write the Declaration of 76. Locke was a Puritan. He was the student of the greatest Puritan of his age, John Owen. That's significant to consider. What was behind, really, the understanding of our Declaration of 76? To deny that is to be a boneheaded idiot, and a lot of people do. That's just stupidity. What drove the ideas behind our Declaration of 76? Well, it says right in the Declaration, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. What are the laws of nature? That's the way things are in the nature of things, the way God created them, seen in the nature of creation. The laws of nature is God. That's the Bible. That's what that phrase has always meant. That's what it means today. No right of revolution is part of the Bible, and no right of revolution is part of the common law tradition. And John Locke never advocated it. In fact, when I say revolution, I'm using the word in the civil law sense, because we call our war for separation from Britain a revolution, but it wasn't. Not at all, in the sense that all other revolutions are. I guess we don't have enough words to describe it, and we use it, but Locke didn't advocate such a thing. And in fact, the English and American Revolution, so-called, were not rebellions against authority. No, not at all. They were rebellions against usurpation of power. They were war against power without authority. Revolution is just rebellion against authority. Every time I see that bumper sticker that says, question authority, I cringe. I understand what they mean, what people mean when they say that, but really, if authority is truly authority, it's not question. What that bumper sticker really means is question whether authority is true authority. And that's what I hope they're saying. But authority, if it's true authority, is always right. And to war against it is a war against God. That's the whole point, again, of Romans chapter 13, verses 1, 2, and 3 especially. If someone has true authority, you don't fight them, because all authority, Romans 13, is true. It's a common sense question. All authority, all warrant, all right, all jurisdiction. You could translate the word that Paul the Apostle uses there in all of those ways. Authority, right, jurisdiction, warrant. Would rightly translate that word, the King James translates power, exousia. It's in about four different forms right there. And we are not to rebel again. Once we know it's true authority and the person acting really does have right and the warrant is good, for example. You remember, maybe some of you are old enough, remember when that movie that was so famous, Wizard of Oz, used to come on every Sunday, not every Sunday night. It came on once a year on Sunday night. And I never got to watch it. And the reason I never got to watch it was because we went to church on Sunday nights. And Dad wouldn't have that. But I do remember catching glimpses of it at different times in my life. And there was a point in there where the gal that was the neighbor lady to Dorothy out there on the Kansas Plains, she was a mean old spinster of a woman. And she said that Dorothy's dog Toto bit her. And she came over on her bicycle and she took the dog. She said, I've got a warrant here from the court. And I remember Dorothy's uncle, she lived with her, I think it was her uncle and her aunt, her parents were gone. He looked at it, he said, Dorothy, the warrant's good. And so he gathered up Toto and handed Toto over. The court had given a good warrant. Well, if the warrant is good, warrant is another word for authority. It's another word for right. It's another word for jurisdiction. If the warrant is good, it's good. And that's why when law enforcement officers come to search a house, our tradition, our custom has always required them to knock and show the warrant. And you can examine it to see if it's good, give you a copy of it. I don't see that happening like it used to. I just see them taking rams, battery rams, busting down the door. Don't show anybody a warrant. And I've been in situations like that where they just said, we don't give two hoots and a holler whether the warrant's good or not. We're taking everything. They didn't just search the house. They took the pictures off the walls. It looked like Betty Lou Who's house after the Grinch that stole Christmas left. It didn't even leave a Christmas ornament. Well, that's what's going on in America. No right of revolution, I said, is part of the Bible. Neither is it part of our Declaration of 76, but there is something that is part of it, and it says it clearly, that people have the right to alter or abolish or even to throw off such a government. Well, that is important, and it may come to war. I understand that. But I want to stress here that that's not the first option. The first option is to use the courts. But it got so in the American colonies, the courts were dominated by the Admiralty Law. Well, some people say, well, that's what's happened in our courts. It has to a great degree. I see that. I see that the law of the city has slipped in under the label of administrative law, for example. But are the courts still open? Yes. And I think it's still important. I can just feel it. But we're going to talk about the standard, where people may know when it's time to stop talking and do something. Right now we're talking, we're using words, we're writing, all of us, we petition the courts, that's a petition of government, that's the First Amendment. We're doing all those things. And until it becomes apparent we can't even do that, then we need to rethink the next move. But right now, at least a lot of the time, the courts are accepting petitions. And if courts aren't accepting petitions and ignoring them, then it may be time to appeal the matter and seek other avenues, maybe even in the legislature. But at all costs, not all costs, that's an exaggeration, but try to avoid violence. If there must be a fight, well, then the evil empire need bring it on. And that's what the British did, of course, the first time around. But that's why our country was birthed, because it happened just that way. Don't be the starter of the fight, is guess of what I'm saying. The springing distributor of all authority, but against abuse of power in order to secure the future, is the way of the Creator. To recognize that He is the spring and distributor of all authority. Thus, our war for independence, and I'll end with this, differs from most all other movements called revolutions, such as history talks about the law of the cities, papal revolution, French revolution, Russian revolution. All of them were attempts to avenge the past, not secure the future. And they didn't really have anything to offer for the future. They just wanted to shake things up and throw the SOBs out, the sons of Belial. But the law of the city is the ever-emerging child of fantasy, rebelling against our lessons from past facts. And that's why countries fraught with revolutions, centuries of it, never prosper. They never really get any better. They remain third world countries. They remain weak, as France has, even. And it is our tradition not to be in that position. And assassination is not the answer. And what this fellow from Belleville, Illinois did is the destruction. That kind of a thing is the destruction of our country. Assassination should be dealt with quickly, not in vengeance, but in correcting the wrong. Well, Gerard, that's enough for today. I yield back to you. And again, I want to say, I forgot one thing, Gerard. Thanks for the opportunity. I always appreciate it. And secondly, whatever I say here may or may not be the views of NLA. But in most cases, I found that it is. But there are some points upon which we disagree, apparently, and I've seen a few of them. But I'm sure that's true of all of us in varying ways. But we try to unify ourselves and move forward because we have fundamental gravamens, things that go to the heart of things, which we agree upon. And those are the things, by the way, that make the difference, not all the little brush fires here and there. Anyway, Gerard, I'm finished for this evening. You have it back.
Okay,
thank you, I'll finish eating my ice cream. It's milk.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I start eating my dinner when you started talking. Thank God. Anyway.
Use time efficiently.
One of them nights. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I'm going to open up the queue. I don't have any specific subjects. We got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff to talk about. So we're going to do the live. So anybody has a question, you can jump into the queue. It's open now. I think it's *6. I don't know if it's then 1. I don't know. Sometimes some people say, and then you got to hit 1. Okay, I got California Fred jumped right in there. Hang on, let me unmute California.
Gerard?
Yes?
Do you want to go through the questions that were submitted for the week first?
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's do that. It's kind of early anyway, so I forgot about that. You got to excuse me. No, I'm off my game tonight. So go ahead.
Okay.
What do you got?
First question tonight. In Pennsylvania, the consolidated status or statutes say that all courts are courts of record. Would it be more proper to go into a traffic court as a defendant and carry on as a court of record since jurisdiction isn't determined yet? Or would it be more strategic to file a counterclaim to challenge jurisdiction as a plaintiff?
Well, you know, I don't do too much traffic court, but, you know, if you're gonna challenge them, the only way to challenge them is under fundamental principles. Because, like you say, they don't have the jurisdiction to begin with. And why do you want to get into all the minutiae of their statutes and their UCC codes or whatever else they're using? It doesn't matter. Because most of the time, 99.9% of the time, especially when there's no injured party, you know, they're not sticking to the – they're violating your due process, your – you know what I mean, your fundamental rights given from God. And you can defend that. Those are easy to defend because we know what those are. And we don't want to get over in playing, you know, step out of crack, you break your brother's back type stuff. So that's where I am with that, you know. And then I would, you know, look at – you can always challenge them. It's good to challenge them. It's good to write papers. And worst comes to worst, at the end of the day, if you don't get too stupid and crazy, you know, if you're not doing good, you pay the fine and you get out. It's, you know, it's fun to practice in traffic court, actually, as long as you can keep your head right. And most of it should be done on paper. I don't have time to do that, so I just pay them if I have to. Or I plead innocent, and I might go up there and do a couple of lines, especially if it's a town where I think I know the people. That always helps, you know. Because now there's a face to the thing, and if it's that blatant, they may want to fix it, you know. But don't hold your breath for that. So, anyway, that's the answer to that. Try not to get bogged down in that stuff, you know. If you want to do it, go ahead and do it. But don't be afraid to bail rather than go to jail unless you're really, really, you know, going in and doing a one-man war, Charlie's War, doesn't really work. I mean, what we're doing is, you know, is association of the people. And we actually cover this stuff in our big case. We talk about this. So we're in the federal court where ultimately if you're going to challenge them and you think you're going to win, you're going to end up in the federal court. So you got to know that. If you don't know that and you don't want to do all that paperwork and deal with all that money and spending $400 and suing them and all that stuff, then just pay the ticket. But if you want to practice and you're not afraid to pay for some of it, have at it, you know. Anyway, that's the best answer I got for that. I don't know anything else, you know, unless Brent wants to add something to that.
Okay, there's kind of a second question to that. If it's preferred to file a counterclaim to a traffic citation, would you have to inform the traffic court that you've opened the counterclaim in a superior court and are waiting for the decision on jurisdiction?
I'm a little confused there. Yeah, it's always better to go in as a plaintiff than a defendant, but that's not always possible. Depends on what the charge is. There's no blanket statements in here on traffic court because, you know, especially if you hit somebody and killed them because you were speeding. What are you going to say? You know what I'm saying? Because you actually did do harm. But when there is no harm done and you want to fight on constitutional principles, but like I said, you're going to end up in the federal court if you do it. And yeah, you know, you can win as a defendant, but it's harder. I mean, you're always back on your heels, it's hard to take the fight. They're always running around the mulberry bush because at that point, you know, you're answering them, they're not answering you. I mean, that's the best answer I have, and I don't know if anybody else, you know, I'm not a big traffic court guy, you know. Some people are out there, and Eddie, what's his name? Is it Eddie Rich? Eddie, oh, I can't remember, but he...
I can't be.
He does that stuff, and what he does is he prepares you before you get stopped, and he gives you a skit, and so what happens is you answer certain things certain ways and you don't say anything else. And so by doing what he says you do, he has this whole scenario, what to say first, what to say second, and am I free to go, and am I free to go. But at some point, if you end up in court and you follow his skit, you didn't contract with them, and he's even got it down to, and he says, now this is where the prosecutor is going to hang himself. And so he, you know, he says, if you followed my skit the way you were supposed to, then we're going to get this to this point, and he's not going to be able to answer this. I thought it was pretty good. You know, it's certainly worth listening to. If you feel like fighting in traffic court, if I had to do it, I would use his methodology because he's very fundamental. Everything he does goes back to fundamental principles, and that's why I like him, because I'm into common law, and I don't really want to memorize a bunch of statutes. So that's my answer, you know.
Okay. The next question is NLA in agreement with a treatise on the law of sheriffs by Walter Anderson that most of the functions of the sheriff to act in a judicial capacity were removed by the Magna Carta?
You know what? I have no idea on that one. That most of them were removed by the Magna Carta? I think I'd have to brush up on my Magna Carta. So
right.
Whoever wrote that, maybe they could school us on that. I mean, I don't know what section. Brent, I don't know. Do you have something on that?
No, I've never read the treatise that they're talking about. I think, well, there's not much definition. When people say sheriff has judicial jurisdiction or whatever they put it, they, as though they sit in judgment in the courts, I don't know that people really know what that means. In other words, they say those words, but they don't define what they mean, so how can you respond to the question? Bottom line, sheriffs were involved for centuries at the courts long before Magna Carta. And Magna Carta wasn't an attempt, and Magna Carta didn't remove anything. It did all Magna Carta attempted to do was reestablish what had been lost. So at every point, Magna Carta, when you look at Magna Carta, just know that what they're saying there and what they're establishing there is the way it was before the Norman invasion, a couple of hundred years, 300-400 years earlier. That's what Magna Carta is trying to establish. So it's not removing things; it's trying to establish what was lost. Our Constitution of the United States does the same thing. It's just an attempt to establish. By the way, this is fascinating. Our Constitution is not an attempt to establish the common law as it stood at a certain time. It's an attempt to establish the common law as it stood before Magna Carta. In other words, our Constitution is an attempt to do the same thing Magna Carta did in the same time. And Justice James Wilson, the first impaneling of justices of our Supreme Court, said that, and he's right. We have reached back far with what we've set for standards of law, and people say, well, our Constitution's out of date. You don't have any idea. If you want to talk about out of date, you want to talk about how far back it reaches, you don't even realize. But the point is, and this is the point that people like that don't get, that stuff they had way back there centuries ago was good. And the first principles of it, I know, we drive automobiles now, we have radios, televisions, internet. People don't live on farms to the extent they used to, hardly at all, do they? They don't understand anything that the agricultural economy and moneyless economy of the Anglo-Saxon England had was just so far different from what we have today. But there's some things that never change. And true law never changes, ever. It is the way it is. It will not change. Why does it change? Because it's a revelation of the mind of the Creator himself, both written in nature, or unwritten in nature, I should say, but it's there. Some people say written in nature. What they mean is it's not written in nature. It's revealed in the nature of things. And also he reveals his mind. His sentences are complete thoughts. His thoughts are revealed by the writings we call the Bible, 66 of them. And he reveals what he wants. He reveals there by the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God, the way things are, and they are not going to change. You cannot break his law. You can break yourself on it. You can think you got away with it, maybe, but you didn't, and you will pay the penalty. Oh, boy, I say that often. I say it to myself. I say it to my family. I say it to my friends. You won't get away with this. Payday's coming. You cannot avoid the consequences, whether they be of obedience to what is the true law or disobedience, burdens or benefits, blessings or cursings. You can't avoid them. You may think you have for years, even for decades. You may have deluded yourself into thinking you have, but you haven't. and other people won't either, and we can see it all around us. We can't always define it exactly and understand it. We know there's trouble in the world, and this trouble in the world comes because men, both together and apart, we're all caught up in this together, and we end up suffering for the lawlessness of others. It destroys our country, and we all suffer. That's why it's incumbent upon us to do something about it. But to talk about the sheriff, the duties of the sheriff traditionally, at the time of common law England, just talking about way long time ago, before the Normans invaded England in the year 1066. Before that, the sheriff was very much part of the court process, and the glory of old common law in Anglo-Saxon and Anglo-Dane England was, as Blackstone puts it in his first volume, that the common law brought a court to the door of every cottage. Every little place had a court. Every little, as they called them, hundreds. A hundred, that's a geographic area that is equivalent to the township today. Our township are the old hundreds. Our counties are the shires. And then break it on down below the hundred, we call it the township. They brought it on down to the manor house of the local organization of farmland. And every person had a duty to have a piece of little 5 acres. If he only had a 5-acre piece, or if he was only attached to the land, he was had a duty to serve on the jury within his jurisdiction. And there was a courthouse close to every house. So you didn't have to travel to the federal courthouse. You didn't have to travel to the county seat. You didn't have to get, well, in those days they wouldn't shake you down to get into the courthouse. But they wouldn't tolerate any violence either in such a place. There were courts everywhere, and that's what we need in America. We need courts everywhere. We need them not only at the county, we need them at the township level, and we need them at the town and village level. And that will bring justice to the door of every house, and men then can resolve their differences. And we won't be looking to bureaucrats to fix it for us, to get our neighbor, because he's burning a... He's having a weenie roast in his backyard, and we hate him, and so we're going to call the county commissioner boys out to shut him down. I've had that happen to me, and I've seen it happen to other people. That's the evil of administrative law and even inhabitant in place. That's what I know about it, but I don't know that I responded to the question. And whoever submitted the question has read this. This may be very good, and maybe I ought to read it. I've never even heard of it. But they can post it someplace, send out an email or tell people where they can find it. If it's worthwhile to read, I'll try to find it.
Well,
back to you, Gerard.
I think you're 100% right. The fact that if in fact the thesis is saying that the Magna Carta took powers away from the sheriff, that would get my ear up to wondering if it's valid or not. Just uh-huh. Based on my knowledge of common law. You know what I mean? It's kind of like President Clinton asking, what is the meaning of it? You know what I mean? Bringing you down this road. I don't know that that's the case, but that puts up a red flag when it says that it's that this document that established this process that our forefathers took, that it would take away the powers of a very common law highest, you know, elected law enforcement official. To me, a suspect. And I mean, I may be wrong, but I would certainly read it carefully with that in my mind, seeing where that occurs or how they think that it can occur or did occur. Anyway, we don't want to beat that one to death. Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Okay, then the next question is, are there any state constitutions that bar an attorney from being elected to or occupying the office of sheriff?
That's a good question, and there may be, and I don't know, but it sounds like a conflict of interest to me. I know, a state trooper can't be part of anything else, any other association. So, you know, an attorney that's going to, what'd you say, what office?
The sheriff's office, would bar an attorney from being elected to or occupying the office of sheriff. No other office is mentioned.
I'm sure by today's standard they'd let anybody in there. They let Obama in. He didn't have any papers. It was like, you know, we always brag about, my dog's got papers, you know what I mean? Obama didn't have any papers, and he's still in there. But anyway, I don't want to get real rude. I don't know, you know what I mean? I don't know if Brent's got anything to say about that, you know?
Buddy, I've known years their licensed attorneys that are the places where that happened, and nobody questioned or sheriff, as far as everybody and the powers, if a conflict of interest, that's the word you use, but if a lawyer is a officer of license to practice,
Brent, I don't know if anybody else, you're breaking up really bad.
I'm sorry. I'm having the
same problem.
Just a minute. Okay. Maybe this is better. I had to hold my head there.
It sounded really good, but we didn't get any of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What I was saying was...
start over.
Yeah. I said at the beginning, I'll start over. I said I've known men that have run for lawyers, licensed in the jurisdiction that have run for sheriff. And I understand, you use the word conflict of interest. I understand what you mean. I understand that is also, it's a separation of powers doctrine. That's why the interests are interests are conflicted, because the lawyer, the attorney, if he's got a license, he's an officer of the highest court of the jurisdiction where he's licensed. If he's licensed in the state of New York, he's an officer of the highest court of that state. If he's licensed in the federal jurisdiction, the federal district jurisdiction, then he's authorized to practice law. He's an officer of that court, of the district court, of that jurisdiction. Well, if you're an officer of the judicial branch, and that's what a lawyer is, how could he be without a conflict, without violating the separation of powers doctrine? How could he also be an executive officer, chief executive officer of the county where he's sheriff? Well, that'd be the possibility.
How does he bring people into his court? How do you get somebody indicted into your own court?
You know, all of these things, that's a good point. And whether or not, I've never seen a case challenging that problem. Now, for example, I've seen cases challenging whether or not a member of Congress could be a member of the Naval Reserve. Because if he's a member of Congress, he's part of the legislative branch, and under our separation of powers doctrine, how could he then be also under the command of the President of the United States as a Naval Reserve officer, for example? Well, our court... Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
Our courts have made an exception there and said, well, that's too thin. It doesn't make that much difference. It's not like it's a full-time job on either ends. Well, also, there have been other challenges like that, but I've never heard of one challenging a lawyer. Now, it could be, I suppose, a lawyer, if he wanted to, he could give up his law license suspended while he was serving a sheriff. But to ask about which states it's that way and which it isn't, I wouldn't have a clue. But I do know that it is a valid question. And I'm glad whoever brought it up. It's something we need to be thinking about. But I would say one more thing, that as far as the laws of nature's God, which we call the Bible, the separation of powers doctrine is there, but in the Bible, no mere mortal was ever allowed to gather all three powers of government into a single will, his will, legislative, executive, and judicial. But men were allowed, under the government of God, to gather two of the powers of government into their hands. And so we see Saul as king, chief executive officer, also served as prophet. But when then he tried to conduct the office of priest, which is analogous, it's an analog to the judicial office, God, when he did that, that was all three powers, and God ripped the kingdom from him, and it was hell for him after that. When I say hell, I don't mean the place where you go when you die. I meant it as a matter of figure of speech. He had a hellish life after that. And we see other examples of that too. Now, there is, see, in our own tradition, we allow sometimes powers to be, two powers to be combined. Now, in England, their common law country, They have always, for many or a few centuries now, allowed the chief de facto judicial, or the chief de facto executive officer of the country, called the prime minister, also be the chief legislative officer of the national legislature, called parliament. You see, he's both. They do allow that. But they have other limiting things that limit that. It's confusing and messy to people that don't live in that kind of a tradition. The common law is always that way, by the way. It's not orderly, and if you try to make sense out of it, you won't always make sense. A lot of times you won't make sense out of it. Logic is not the life of our common law. I'm going to repeat that again. Logic is not the life of our common law. The life of our common law is the true law, and the true law doesn't always make sense to men. And it never has and never will, any more than it's as mysterious to men often, like to say, as the doctrine of the Trinity. It's not a contradiction, the doctrine of the Trinity, but neither does it make sense to logic. It doesn't make sense to the logic of the smallness of the human mind. Well, there are a lot of things like that. Trust law in America is that way. It's mysterious to people. It's mysterious to everybody, but we know what it is. Just like when the Bible says, thou shalt not steal, and we say, he who takes what isn't his and shall pay the price or go to prison. We learn, we're little children, to learn that thou shalt not steal. There's a lot more to thou shalt not steal than just the simplicity of it. And what we all ought to always ask, it's good to ask, but why? Why is it we shouldn't steal? Because if you can't answer that question, there's really no reason that you should follow the law. Of course, the reason that we should not steal is because the source of that standard is pure. Do we understand the source of that standard? No, we don't understand him. We just know he is. We believe he is, and we see that he is, and we see that we can't buck him. And we've seen what happened to men that try. And so we don't have to understand it. It just is what it is, and there's no sense trying to fight it. It's a dogma. There's no explaining it all. But it is good to know the reason behind it all. And if you don't know the reason behind it all, the Patriot movement in America will fall flatter than a flitter. And those that went before us and established our country openly acknowledged all over, it was pervasive, that the laws of the true law, the laws of nature, the laws of nature's God, come from the creator of all things. And if men aren't willing to acknowledge that and do it openly, then whatever they believe, that people say, oh, I believe the Constitution. Well, why do you believe the Constitution's true? Well, I believe the Bible. Well, why do you believe the Bible's true? If you don't know why you believe it's true and you haven't got good evidence for it, you may as well drop it and go do something else and become Islamic or some other ridiculous thing because you're being inconsistent, certainly, in what you're doing. Well, that was a long answer to an otherwise simple question, but separation of powers is what we're talking about here, and separation of powers is a fundamental, one of the chief fundamentals of our common law government, because without separation of powers, the executive will control the courts like they do in France and South America, and where you're a judge and you're in the civil service ranks and you're dependent upon somebody in government, mostly the executive, for your pay and the continuance of your job. That's why, for example, in our Constitution, we have that the judges, at the Supreme Court judges, can't be dismissed from office. Their pay cannot be diminished by law. Why? We don't want anybody to control them, especially Congress or the president. And we have separation of powers, you see. Independence of the judiciary, independence then, to add to that, independence of the grand jury, independence of the jury, which is even more of an extension. The policy, not policy, that's not a good word, the pervasive feature of our common law government is the disbursement and then the separation of power. Everybody has their own sphere, and they do what's right within it. And God has given a certain jurisdiction, and the powers are separated. And the powers that be don't have a right to encroach. That's an important question to raise. I'm glad somebody raised it. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, thank you, Brett. Jan, anything else?
I have a couple more.
Okay.
The Seventh Amendment states, quote, ... and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. What rules of common law would allow the re-examination of facts tried by a jury?
Only those fundamental rules that we rested to begin with. In other words, you're not allowed to try a fact that is established by a jury unless the facts weren't the facts and somebody lied and there's fraud. And that would be under the common law. Look at laws of nature, nature's God. Did it violate that? Was the truth told? You know, you can only go back to where you left that fundamental principle. And yes, you definitely can go back if you're basing your decision on a falsehood, because then that law was no law at all. Look at that jury makes the law. The sovereign makes the law. So if it was based on false principles and false practice, then it falls under that thing that says it was no law at all. So yeah, you can go back in that sense, but only in the strictest sense of the confines of the common law as laid out in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and, you know, and our common law, you know, precedents or whatever you want to call it. So there, you know, you can go back, but under strict guidelines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next question. Please explain how when police officers make arrests because they're private corporations and without authority from we the people, such as sheriffs have, how the arrests police make are nothing more than a citizen's arrest.
Well, look, they're all operating under color of law. You know what I mean? And even a citizen's arrest is valid if the affidavit he's swearing to is laying out the facts of the law, and then so now you got to go get an official who has the authority given to him by we the people to enforce that law. So I'm losing my train of thought now. So their question was, well, read the question again because I don't want to get off.
Okay.
I understood it when you read it, but go.
Right. Please explain how when police officers make arrests.
All right.
You want the whole thing, or
that it's just like a citizen's arrest, and it doesn't
right.
hold the authority. Well, you know, when you fight them for violating your due process and your rights, that's exactly what you're fighting. You're fighting that they didn't have the jurisdiction to do what they did. You know, and so that's that whole thing back again to our due process of did they violate it? Is that what they're doing? And so absolutely. I mean, so it's not even a citizen's arrest. I wouldn't raise it that high if it was done unjustly. Now, that's not to say that, look, if you're breaking the law and he's arresting you, and even if it is a citizen's arrest and there's an injured party, you're not going to get off. You know what I mean? I don't think, because all he has to do, of course, they don't like to do this. This is a problem because they violate due process. He should be, if he witnessed it, he should be signing an affidavit swearing that he witnessed it. You don't usually see signed affidavits by police officers or any officer for that matter, IRS agents or anything. They never swear to what they're saying as the truth, you know. So that's a problem, you know. So I hope I answered that yes, you know, if you want to challenge the jurisdiction, you're free to, but you can't challenge it in every case when you're wrong, because you're not going to be right anyway, you know. Even if it is a citizen's arrest, you know, then it becomes a valid citizen's arrest, I guess, if there's an injured party there, because that's what we the people gave them that authority for, to protect the weak from the strong. So, you know, you can get back. See, common law is great because you can take any of those things, and whether it's their statute or not, and go through it and flesh it out and say, let's see, is there an injured party? Was it a valid claim? You know, they don't do any of that. And most of the time it's nothing more than, like what Brent says, stupid, you know, Roman civil law, you know, tit for tat, step on a crack, break your mother's back, give us the dollar, get the heck out of here. You know, that type thing. So if it's not that, then there's some kind of validity to it, and it can be fleshed out. But other than that, you're absolutely right. You know, like the state police, look at, they don't have a constitutional authority in most of the states. They're the governor's private police force. You know, they answer only to him. So that's a problem. I have a problem with that. You know, they need to make the police officer's oath very much hinged to the defense of the Constitution. Because other than that, then they're just a mob working for the governor. And that's what I'm afraid of with the new laws here, the SAFE Act laws, when they come to enforce them, they're gonna beat on heads just like they've always done in fascist and, you know, communist countries and stuff when they took people's rights away. That's exactly what they're gonna be doing. And they're ready to do it. They said they'd do it. So don't be surprised. Anyway, I don't know if you got anything to add to that, Brent. But.
No, I think you said enough. I just repeat it, but I'll just let it go. I can't say everything about everything. So many things come to mind. I have to stop and say, no, just relax. We'll be back next week, you know.
Yeah. I got your blood flowing a little bit, and I didn't shut up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll do better luck next time. What else you got, Jim?
Well, I have two more, but they're totally in the fiction. One's on IRS and one's on UCC stuff, so maybe we should just move on for tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the same answer all the time, though.
Right.
When you do the IRS and the UCC, we're broken records, you know, and most people are their own worst enemy because they go in and they contract with them by the things that they do. And you gotta understand what it is they're saying. And I don't know who said it, but their own law, it says, right, in that Title 26, that it creates no new law. And the reason it doesn't, and the reason they consider it constitutional, is because you swear yourself into it, basically. And your right to contract with them is 100%. And if you say, you know, I'm gonna do this or that, and you sign a contract, you know, don't do that with the devil because he collects too, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll let that go. So okay. We can go if there's no others, and there isn't. The queue is open. I'm gonna unmute California Fred because he's been sitting there very patiently through all this. Hang on. Okay, Fred, California Fred, you're open. Take
Thank
it away.
Thank you, Gerard. I have a question for Brent Winters. Uh-huh. Mr. Winters, did you hear the response from that self-appointed judge and to what NLA had filed?
No, I didn't.
Ah. Well, we'll have to send you we're going to post it, Brent.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Well, you can listen. Like it.
Mr. Winters, you can listen to the recording because that's where my question was going. See, Gerard spoke earlier about, or you did, about licensed attorney, and that's one thing NLA hits head on is no such thing as a license issued by any state. So these guys are just paying bar card membership bullshit. If they don't have no license, the state does not issue a license for an attorney. Get that straight right now. But my question was this. Now, National Liberty Alliance is having a lot of trouble getting their paperwork through, and somehow this judge wanted to throw the case out because there was no attorney to press the charges. So my question to you is this. What is the actual proper procedure for a redress of grievance with our government? You don't have to have an attorney to press the charges. The people can do it through the grand jury. What is that process? And what about the violation of the public trust? It's all over the place. These guys are not living up to their oaths of office. And as far as prosecution, what about a private prosecutor? Someone we cram down their throats.
Well, something we've gone south on, we've done wrong on in America. We've developed the idea of a professional prosecutor, and that's no part of our tradition. As far as I know, in England yet today,
there are no professional prosecutors. In other words, if there's a criminal case to be prosecuted, the Crown hires a lawyer to prosecute the case. And they'll pick them out from a law, what we would be called the equivalent of a law firm. And but there is no one elected to office to prosecute cases. Now, unless things have changed in the last few years, I don't keep up with everything in England, but here in our own country, I remember not. It seems to me like just yesterday, and around where I'm from, the rural counties, a prosecutor in all these counties was a part-time job. And all the prosecutors practiced law privately and were prosecutor at the same time. They got a half-time pay to do it. I think it really happened in a big way about 15 years ago here. Then all of a sudden, the state legislature said, well, we want all the prosecutors to be full-time, and they jacked their salary up to about $100,000 or better. And even in the most, in the smallest of counties, where there are only just maybe 10,000 people, and made it even more of a professional kind of a thing. It's a civil service job anymore. I mean, I know you run for the office, but more and more and more we leave the tradition of what, and you talked about private prosecutors. Of course, in a true common law jurisdiction, there are no policemen. Now, you go to the Bible and look, you search, I've been looking at it for many decades. There are no paid government employees in God's plan for government. Doesn't need to be. And when you look at what the Bible has written expressly and specifically, you see that it worked pretty well. You don't need that. You don't need prosecutors. We're getting back to that point. Why do we need? You talked about private prosecutors. Well, that's the idea. And of course, a lawyer that's in the business of prosecuting cases and may be hired on a case by case basis approximates closer our common law tradition than the way we're doing it now. And all you're getting is just a lot of vicious men that get in positions of power and want to destroy their political enemies. That's what a prosecutor becomes. I've seen it here locally. It's really appalling. But back to this thing about there's still a mysteriousness that goes on with people, especially in the patriot community, about what a lawyer is and where's this license come from and who said that they could, these people that license attorneys, who said they could do that? And you'd made the comment that the government or the state doesn't license attorneys. Well, the state doesn't have to license attorneys, but if the state, the government, recognizes the license of an attorney and enforces that, and they do, they make, you know, most states, all states I know of, it's a crime to practice law without a license in the courts, and then the prosecutor will prosecute that. But it's dubious to define what that means, to practice law. Nobody's ever really landed on a sure answer there. There are a lot of people that, you know, I guess if you're in front of the bar, that bar that's in the courtroom there, you get up in front where the lawyers are and cross the bar, as they say. You become, all bar members are supposed to be up in there, and unless the judge gets permission for other people to be up there, sometimes he does. But in any event, you'd said that the Bar Association licensed lawyers. That's not true in every state. That's true in a lot of states. It's not true in every state. California, for example, is the Bar Association that licensed the lawyer. The Bar Association is a private organization. That's absolutely true. But it's an organization that the government recognizes, and they won't prosecute people that practice law with a license from the Bar Association. In the states, I think I've said this before, bear with me, I say it again, because some people may not have heard it, but in states like California, where the Bar Association licensed the lawyers, the Bar Association is also in charge of disciplining lawyers. If they're to discipline them, of course, it doesn't happen that often in those places. But my observation, doesn't happen, but it should happen. But they are in charge. And the courts recognize that for whatever reason. They chose to. And the rest of the government does, too. And in other states, such as Illinois, the highest court of the state licenses attorneys. The Bar Association has nothing to do with it. And the highest court of the state, called the Supreme Court of the state, also is in charge of disciplining lawyers that break the code of ethics. So they think they should be corrected or disbarred, whatever they think. In states where the Bar Association licensed lawyers, bar membership for lawyers is mandatory. You can't practice law without being a member of the bar. In states where the highest court of the state licensed lawyers to practice, then lawyers don't have to belong to the state bar, but they can if they want. So all of these things go into the mix. And then when people talk about lawyers being licensed by the Bar Association, or they say this or that, tell her about the lawyers, all those things aren't always true. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. But I do know this also, that the reason the way things are, and I could try to cut this, not talk long, cut it short, it's a long history. Why do we even have licensed lawyers in the English-speaking world? And it goes back to our history after the Norman invasion, and when William the Conqueror conquered England, the Battle of Hastings, 14 October 1066, he declared himself lord of all the land of England and everything that in it is. And he said the common law will remain in force. And that was the habit of the Normans, no matter where they went. When they went to Sicily, they did the same thing. The law of the Sicilians is in force. When they went to what we call now Asia Minor, they conquered, the Normans conquered it too. They conquered Constantinople. Those fellows were conquering everything. And everywhere they went, they always said the same thing. The law that is here, when we get here, will stay in force. Well, William the Conqueror said the same thing. And but instead of allowing the courts to continue as they had, he brought in Roman priests and made them judges. Well, Roman priests, they were from France. You know, they didn't know anything about the common law. That's a Roman civil law country. And plus that, they're Roman Catholics, so the only standard they have, they don't have a Bible. They're all experts on the canon law of Rome. That's what a Roman priest is. He's a canon law lawyer. That's what he's educated to be. He's educated very well to be that. He's required to go to school for anywhere from 7 to 20 years, depending upon 7 years minimum, though, for crying out loud. These fellows are educated to the hilt, many of them. And they're Roman lawyers, the lawyers of the law of the city. Well, he took those priests and he put them in the common law courts. Well, if you're a common law or a priest, a Roman priest in a common law court, you don't know anything about the common law, what law are you going to lean toward using when disputes come before you? Well, obviously. And they kept inserting, well, we've got a good principle for the Code of Justinian on that. They started inserting their stuff. And if you were an Anglo-Saxon or an Anglo-Dane, you couldn't even go into court because you couldn't speak their language. There were only about 6,000 invaders. About 6,000, and they spoke Norman French, a bastardized form of the French language that the Normans, they were from Norway, had settled on the coast of France for about 165 years, and they picked up the French language and butchered it up real bad. That's what they spoke. Well, they brought that to England. Well, there wasn't anybody in England. There were about near 800,000 people, believe, about 800,000 Anglo-Danes in England. None of them could speak French. They couldn't get into court. Nobody could understand them. Couldn't get a hearing. So they developed a class of men who knew both languages in time. And if you knew both languages, you could go to your neighbor and you could make his case in court. Maybe it was a widow woman. Maybe it was an orphan. Maybe it was just a family member. But if anybody could speak both languages, and then, of course, they began to take fees to do that. And it started out in a humble way, but they understood words. Our courts, and now our English language is shot through with Norman French legal words like petition. Petition is in our Constitution. That's a Norman French word that the Anglo-Dane didn't understand. We understand it now. De jure, de facto, those are all Norman French and Latin words. A lot of other ones that we use constantly in our common law. Well, and we still, lawyers go into court and they use some of those words, and other people don't know them. I personally wish we'd get rid of all of them, but as our concepts are bound up in those Norman French words, many of them, we get rid of the words, we get rid of the concept. We have to find a way to transfer it to the English language. But at any rate, as time went on, they helped people. These people could speak both Norman French and Anglo-Saxon, which is English, ancient English. And they noticed also that even though they were speaking a language that the Roman priests could understand, the Roman law was taking over their courts, and their native law, their Anglo-Saxon law, was being taken away. And they began to worry about it. So they developed what they called the Inns of Court. And what they were doing when they did that, they said, you fellas have your monasteries. and you wear your little skull caps, and you ride around on mules because you're a special priest. They said, we got our, and they call, they said, we're special too, and we're common lawyers. You're civil lawyers, you're civilians. That's what they call them, civilians. That's what a civilian is, a lawyer of the common, or of the law of the city, the civil law, the canon law. Well, we're not civilians, we're commoners. And a commoner in England originally was a common lawyer, a lawyer of the Volk right, the people, the Volk, the folks. Right, the folk's duty, the people's law, is translation from the old Germanic tongues. That's what Anglo-Saxon is. And they begin to compete. They would not let these common lawyers into Oxford to learn. That was a Roman institution. All the universities of the world are inventions of Rome at the command of the Roman Pope back in the 11th century. He founded the first one at Bologna, and the purpose of the university system throughout the world was to replace the Bible with the canon law. And that's exactly the way the Pope said it expressly. That was the purpose of the university system. It's a secret religion kind of a system of degrees, and that's why they give doctor degrees and all that, Bologna and master's degrees. Well, the common lawyers begin to compete with the law of the city lawyers, the canon law, the priests, and they develop their own institutions because they wouldn't let them into Oxford. And they, these institutions called Inns of Court, and they're still in England. There were four of them, Gray's Inn, Lincoln's Inn, and there were two others. I don't know how many of them are there. I think all of them are still there. They became very sophisticated in training men in due process, because that's what the common law is. It's all a matter of process. Somebody asked a while ago, well, how could the facts of a jury be overturned? And Girard touched on it. He didn't say it just this way, but it came down to, hey, if the jury says the facts are this way and we discover that due process was, they violated due process in getting those facts, we got to go back and do it again. We're going to overturn it. Well, rightly so. That's called the rules of the common law. That's the rules of due process. That's what common law is. More than anything else, is the way we do things, not what we do. The course we follow in getting it done. And if you didn't follow the right course, then the facts are not reliable. Good process, we say good result. Bad process, then we don't trust the result of the jury or anybody else. I was involved in a case in federal court once in Los Angeles, attempted murder and extortion. And at the end of the trial, the jury deliberated, and unbeknownst to anybody, one of the jury members was an immigrant from England. And they got to talking about, we found this out later, got to talking about extortion. And what was it? And this person was accused of extortion, and this person was my client, one of them, there were five of them. And this English immigrant turned American smuggled an English dictionary into the jury room to show the other jury members how they defined extortion in the English language, in the real English language, which isn't ours. Ours is American. It is real English. This is the way we understand it. Well, an investigator was hired after the trial and discovered that's what happened, and the judge immediately set aside the jury verdict. Well, that's because due process wasn't followed. Then that's an example of how a jury verdict can be overturned in a federal court. I just heard my plug it in. But anyway.
You went mute, sir. We can't hear you.
That's because I'm trying to plug my phone in. Thank you. I'll have to set it back up here. Can you hear me better now?
Oh, well, I can hear you now.
Go ahead.
Winters, I think the most important part of what I asked you was this.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're all ready for the short answer because.
yeah.
And I know this is really unfair of me to ask because you didn't hear the judge's response.
Uh-huh.
So maybe this would be a real good question for maybe next time.
Well, what is the question? Then you can ask it in next time. Because I want to listen to what the judge said.
Right, I know you do. You live for every word. But
yeah.
My question is, like, the redress of grievance, is there a standard court case or some way to file a redress of grievance with our government for their violation of the public trust. Because, quite frankly, they're so far askew of the Constitution, we can't even recognize it anymore. I yield.
Well, I think that Bob Schultz already did that when he came up with the Articles of Freedom, and he filed those redress of grievances. And what Bob Schultz thing was, he said, look at the last part. I think he said the third part of the First Amendment has never been tried in a court of law, and that is the redress of grievances. If they have to, they have to answer. And he went to court, and one verdict they got was, oh, yes, you can file a redress of grievance, but we don't have to answer it. That's like saying you can vote, but we don't have to count it. You know, there were some ridiculous things. But basically, that was filed in every state. And with the president and with all the Congress, he rented, what's the island there that they came up with the Federal Reserve there on North Carolina? Drawing a blank, but he rented that place and televised it. And he went through the whole process of having delegates elected in their legal, subdivisions and put on as delegates. And you know what? Guess what? The government didn't listen to it, did they? They didn't care. So that tells me that you have to come in a certain force, with a certain authority, or they're going to ignore it no matter what. If they don't think that you have most of the people on your side, they're never going to yield, So you have to have a certain critical mass to move these guys. They're just used to doing what it is that they do, and they're never going to move because you put certain words in or you do a process the proper way. It's up to us to make them do that, however that has to happen. And we've discussed that all the time when we have discussions about where we're going and trying to strategize this thing out and play out the different scenarios of where we think we're going to be. I mean, we do that. Of course, we never know where we're going to be ultimately, but you do want to try to think ahead a little bit and prepare yourself. And sometimes they surprise us; they do something completely off the wall. And a lot of times they put the rope around their necks, But at any rate, I think that we're just frustrated that they don't listen to us, and we have to figure out the ways that it's going to take for us. Get them to respond. I mean, look at this paper. We have a case in the court that we paid for a number that basically they have an answer. And they just usurped all of our due process and slapped us in the face and they put us on the curb thinking that we wouldn't know what to do or what to say. And I don't know if you know it, but ultimately this judge will be indicted into this case because he's in there. We gave him knowledge of things going on, and he's an officer of the court. He has a duty to give it to a prosecutor or whatever. I mean, he's not just sliced bread sitting there. We put him there for a reason. He needs to do his job. And I mean, how can you state it any clearer than we did in our paperwork? And so for him to ignore that, of itself is an act of defiance and treason as far as I'm concerned. He's showing his true colors. The guys in Nuremberg said, I'm just following orders, and they hung them. So what do they think, that they're going to be, that they're less bound than those guys are, when they're violating our life and our liberties and our prosperity and our property and everything that we stand for? I mean, there will be consequences, and if they think that there's not, they're under serious delusion. And I do believe they are under serious delusion. I think they're going to be the last ones to realize it when it happens, really, because there's a lot of stuff going on right now. You would think that some of these guys, they got so much evidence against them and so much stuff going on, you'd think that they would have backed off a long time ago. But it's just, I think maybe Brent touched on this. But there's a certain, when you violate the law of God to such a degree and blatantly violate it, God hardens your heart. And what happens is you don't even have the ability to repent. And you just dig your hole deeper and deeper and deeper just like the Pharaoh did in Egypt when Moses said, let my people go. And he got angrier and angrier. And I think that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with that same type of mentality. And it's not going to be easy, but you know what? It's ready to break because we're not the only ones banging on their door chimes. There's a lot of people out there. The pressure's up. And I think that we do it the best, though, because, I mean, when you read that paper, what is there in there that you don't understand? I mean, I think it paints a pretty clear picture to anybody with a sixth grade education, you know? So I don't know. I mean, it's like, look, it's either fire or it's not fire. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. You're not a little bit pregnant, you know what I mean? And so they got a duty, and they need to step up to the plate. And it's up to us to hold their feet to the fire by lighting these brush fires, putting these things on the public record, pushing this paperwork through. Now, all this stuff needs to be on the public record. Everything that passes between us and them, it's a story. And when they send letters to the judge back and forth, guess what? That's illegal. That's ex parte. That's not to be. If they ask this judge to look at this case and do something with it, why didn't that motion get put in paper and sent to us for us to respond to it before the judge even saw it? That's the way it's supposed to work, right? You know, and even if they said we were breaking some law, we still get an opportunity to respond to that. That judge is not a chancery judge. He's not a dictator. As a matter of fact, we spent a lot of time explaining to the magistrate. We have no judges. That this was a tribunal. And that the jury was to make the decisions and the judge was not to make any decisions. And they were okay with that because they took our $400 and they didn't say, no, we can't do that. When they took our money and they stamped that paper and they didn't object to any of that stuff and then they went ahead and responded to something that they didn't even need to respond to and did all kinds of stupid stuff that, as far as I'm concerned, you know, they talk about us contracting with them. What did they do? You know, did a knee-jerk thing that, you're all no good, get out of here type thing, you know? Nobody gets to see the wizard. No way, no how. There you go. Wizard of Oz for you, Brett. But at any rate, that's going to come back to bite them. People aren't stupid anymore. And the information's out there. And by all of us talking about it and pushing this and making it the dinner table discussion, that's what it needs to be. That's how it's going to go away. Because how could you, if you don't have any inkling or understanding of law, how could you read that paper and not become very perturbed by it? I don't know. At least I do. If everything we're writing is true, people should be very upset with that. So it's up to us to get them upset. That's our job. You know, I mean, that's part of our strategy.
These snowflakes out here, I mean, they've got the attention deficit of a potato chip. They get triggered over nothing.
Well, no,
they don't understand the law, the Constitution, or anything. I mean, these people are brain dead. They've been drinking fluorinated water and eating sack lunches at school. And God knows what the Obamas have been feeding them. GMOs plus.
Look, it's true. There's a lot of them that are under mind control. There's no doubt about it.
There is something I would like to see you put in this big fat thing you're writing up, and that is this. All of these mass shootings, I've noticed that these people, that they never revealed the results of the autopsies, and that these people have been under secret government programs with MK Ultra. That needs to come out, and our government needs to fess up. I mean, I'm sick and tired of the CIA doing experiments on the American people in the subway system of New York. That came out. Where did they get the authority to do this? Where did we sign up to agree to this? How can they use the people like guinea pigs?
Well, look,
these are the things I need. I want to see come up in this paperwork is the violation of the public trust. And how do we establish a grievance with for a redress of grievance with the stupid-ass government?
Well, look,
that's my point. I mean, I'm going to mute out. You can go on your rant or whatever. I'm not going to speak anymore.
Okay. Yeah, we've got a lot of people we want to go through. But what I do want to say is there's other people out there that have them caught dead to rights with metadata. There's George Webb with evidence, Gill, all of them, and it's going to get put in the courts, and we're going to back them. We're talking to them because you don't even know the first thing about this guy that got shot and all the details behind it that they're hiding. And they're desperate right now, so there's nothing they won't do because they're losing it, whether you know it or not. They're losing. They've lost lots of ground because people are waking up. The Internet's waking them up, and there's lots of young people who are very Internet savvy that are hurting them. You know, we don't need the majority of people to wake up. We just need that tireless minority, the guys that know how to move data across things and get their things out, and YouTube and that. That's what's killing them. And you look and go see what these guys have that they're bringing into the courts now. Their dominoes are falling as we speak. And I know our cases are near and dear to us, but any one of these cases, what they have, and the evidence that they have, and the way it's getting pushed through, can take them down. And I mean, we're going to help team up with them, and we're going to protect them, because when they put their stuff in our case, then there's no point in them going after those whistleblowers anymore, because they're done, because we're documenting it in a court case. So I don't know, it's very exciting. So there's a lot of catching up to do for us on these different things,
Gerard,
that are going on that we don't even know about. Yes.
Back to the same question. Where is a court case that you can cite that specifically addresses how do you redress government? Because as I understand it, that's always a catch-22, that they like to make you jump through hoops that aren't there. And squeal out of the way with undefined words.
Well, you have to get them in a catch-22 situation. And if you see what's going on with George Webb and how he's presenting his evidence, and he's making 20 videos a day documenting everything, you're going to have a hard time not answering his process. And you need to go on and look at his process and exactly what he's doing and see how powerful we're going to be between his process and our process. That's all I can tell you right now, because I still am trying to get my head around all the little things that are going on here with this due process and all the evidence that they got and how to present it. And believe me, there are people in the government right now that are poised to take this and run with it, because they've pissed enough people off that we actually have people that are willing, as long as they have the backing, the mandate of the people, to go ahead and take that stuff and push it through this process. Not the least one of being is Donald Trump pushing the agenda forward. Now I know he likes to play politics, but the bottom line is, you know, all he has to do is give us a special prosecutor and it's over. Once we get that court of record in there and we start going with it, then they're back on due process. It's not impossible. It's just a matter of doing it. And of course they don't want to give up their gravy train that they've had control over for so many years. And so you got to pick a case that you can win, that's a little bit more, not so close to the top, that has a simple point to make that you can push. Like when Gandhi had all the people go, they said an Indian cannot make his own salt, and he had them all go to the ocean and scoop the salt out where the salt place was, where the salt evaporated, and he had all those thousands of people scoop the salt out because it was such a simple act, and it was outlawed, and it was ridiculous. It was clear, You see, it's the emperor has no clothes. When the little kid finally goes, hey, he's naked. That's what Gandhi did. He picked a simple thing, and he called him out, and everybody could see, like the plain as day, that he was right. And that's how he ended up prevailing. You know, so we gotta kind of do the same thing with these issues that we know we can push through, that are simple fundamental issues that they can't answer, that it's impossible for them to answer without admitting that they're the enemy. That's the thing right there. So I don't know.
Gerard,
we'll see.
Sir, I need to mention one thing that everybody needs to know. I went on the WhiteHouse.gov website today. And under 7/19, that's today, under Trump's thing, what he did is he appointed an inspector general over the National Security Administration. He created a new office, an inspector general, to oversee the NSA. Do you realize how huge this is?
Yeah, because they've been working with no oversight for as long as they've been in existence, as far as I know.
Over the NSA. Now, I don't know how long it's going to take him to do the same thing for the CIA.
Right.
And maybe a few other alphabet soups out there.
That's right. Well, look, at the dialogue is out there, Fred. This was unheard of a couple of years ago. But look, this is all good stuff, and we will be talking about it, and we will
I
come
understand.
To
I don't want to hug. I just had to tell you that one.
Well, yeah, look, any good news you can't hold back. We want more good news than bad news, because there is more good news. They just scream the bad news so that they try to drown out the good news, and that's a psyops game. It definitely is. Anyway, I'm going to move on. We got Crystal sitting there, and I would like to see what Crystal is doing this evening, what kind of trouble she's getting into over there in my home state. Let me see. Thank you, Fred, by the way. Crystal, you are unmuted. Go ahead. Can you hear me? Unmute yourself. I don't hear you at all. You must be muted. I've got to find the button. Here, let me mute you and unmute you so maybe you'll hear it. I had a couple things I would like to ask Crystal.
Well, hello.
Okay, we got Ollie because Crystal fell off. I got tired. I guess I flipped it too many times.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the interview we're uploading up on the news channel. But first off, I want to answer one of Brett's questions. I get a chance to do that, and I'm going to take advantage. He asked a week or two how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Now, I wasn't sure. So I asked one of my leprechauns, and he says, he got a gleam in his eye. He says, well, I'll tell you what, Lottie Book. He says, now, it's one. However, now, if you've got St. Michael holding that pin, the answer is 1,004, because we have 1,000 angels dancing, three leprechauns doing a jig, and St. Michael himself, for he has the power to hold the pin and do a wee bit of dancing with the rest of us. So that's your answer, Brent.
Well, that's pretty funny. So what else is going on, Ollie?
Okay, now we've got an excellent interview. We're uploading segments. I'm up to part three. And these are excellent interviews that... Lauren Pierce from Redoubt News interviewed you and John Durash, and they're excellent. And I encourage everybody to start watching those, subscribe to the news channel, and when you watch any video on the news channel, throw a like on it, because the more likes you get, the higher it goes up in the YouTube search engine. And then with each video, you know, you put keywords that go along with it. But anyway, that's about it. I just want to alert everybody to that, and then encourage them to go up and watch those videos.
Yeah, the interview that Lauren did was, I think it was an hour and 30 minutes or something. It was pretty long. But Ollie has taken it and broken it down into segments. Some 6-7 minutes. The long ones are 14, but they need to be. And they really do hold your interest. And then what he did, he put these collages of photos from Malheur and Nevada and all, and just different places that pertain to and relate to the subject matter that's being discussed on the screen. And I think it's very powerful for a number of reasons. I think it's more powerful than having a video camera on my ugly mug, you know what I mean? While we're talking, when these are all pictures that people are familiar with, especially out there. And so you don't have to pay attention necessarily to the screen the whole time, but they do catch your attention, and they do elicit certain feelings of when you see these pictures. And I just think it's more powerful than anything else that you could put on there while this discussion is going on. So you got to really see them. I think it really works. And I think we've kind of cracked another code as far as getting by people's attention span, you know? So thank you, Ollie, for all that good work.
Yeah, okay.
All right, I got the next guy is 6623. I have no name. Hang on, let me... You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me? You know what? I've been listening to you guys all the time. My name's Cynthia. But it wasn't until I paid my $5 that you guys even recognized my that I'm getting a chance to talk. But I have a question. I've been listening to is administrative court and administrative law the same?
Administrative court and administrative law, are they
the same? One guy... He talks. He was saying that they're like illegal. They've been illegal for years. And well, I have a case that I'm going to need. I don't know if I'm gonna, how I get the help, but I have an appeal that I'm going to send back to the Office of Inspector General.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a social worker by trade, and I had my own company, and we did billing through Centers of Medicare and Medicaid. And my clients, my customers, my employees, you know, they went on, they messed up. But they didn't do it because I still billed. So when I billed, that's considered fraud. And so that's okay. But then what happened was they put my name on this database. I can't get a job anywhere. Because it doesn't say that I did anything wrong, but it says program conviction, right? So I asked them, is there a way I can appeal this? They said, yeah. She said, you didn't get a letter? I said, I never got a letter. They sent it to the wrong address. So I never got the judicial due process. So when I found that out, which was 3 weeks ago, I put an appeal together. I dug everything up, and I found out that they don't go through the rulemaking process properly. In other words, there's no transparency. Meaning, when they make these, they contemplate, Congress put them in place, and they all have them, like the welfare office has them. They call them unemployment has them. They have they use them, right? Okay. But the problem is the laws that they come up with. If the people are not aware of them, or even where to find them, then you're subjected to that kind of stuff. So when I talked to the lady, she said we have 6,000 people in our database. I said, well, it sounds to me like it's a witch hunt, because why isn't that there? Where's the transparency at? So that's where I'm going. I mean, that's where I'm at with it. Like, I really don't think that I'm going to, if they're going to, because I didn't agree with it. I didn't agree with it because, number one, I didn't get a chance. I didn't get the fair judicial procedure because they sent it to the wrong wrong place, and they have to be held accountable for that part of it. That's number one. Number two, even when I look at the law, because these kind of companies, what they used to do is target hospitals and doctors. Later on, a couple of years, I think it was in 2007, of which nobody knows about, we learn later, they decided to target all healthcare people. But part of my argument was, why isn't this information, when you start to make changes laws or do the rulemaking process, part of the rulemaking process is making it so that there's a register, and there is a federal registry, but I had to literally dig for it only because I was doing research to file the appeal. Just the average John, it's not gonna find it. I think that's what makes it a good job. And then a lot of people don't realize that Congress and the people legislate the law. So I use that. I said I didn't agree because I'm going to sanction them in my appeal because I feel like if we the people, if you had been doing your part properly, I wouldn't have, been here. If the information was available to me and 6,000 other medical professionals, you wouldn't have this problem. And I just want to hear what you have to say about it. And then I'm going to need, how will I get in touch with someone? And it may be a year process, but I'm not backing down. And I'm just going I'm going to defend myself if I have to, because the lawyer that I had in Ohio, he robbed me. I paid all the money back. I spent almost $10,000, and I still got a shovel shit. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just like bullshit. Excuse my French. That's what I was asking about. So I've been listening to this administrative court and law, and according to that one guy, he said it's been illegal for 81 years, since Franklin Delano Roosevelt created it. Hello?
Yeah, I have myself muted, so I didn't make a question.
Huh?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, look, you're right. Administrative law does have no teeth. They use it. I mean, you could look at if you're contracted in, that's a different thing. You know what I mean? If you have a contract with them, then that's administrative law, and a lot of times it's arbitration and all that stuff. But when they're coming after you with administrative law, they have no authority. It was a Supreme Court judge. I think he was retiring.
He said that. Right, that's what that guy was saying.
Right, there was a ruling, and he said all these administrative courts are null and void. They're unconstitutional. I mean, so, you know.
You're unconstitutional.
Now, that, you buy a cup of coffee.
So I may have to have someone. I mean, I don't know, a master, because I'm telling you, I am not dealing with no attorney in this system. None of them. They're all idiots, and they're thieves, and liars, and robbers. I'm doing it. So I'm going to have to do it. I'll file the motions. I'll do whatever I can do. And if I'm in Arizona, so I have to file the motion. There's a federal court, and it's like $400. You want to tell them? I'm a waiver because I don't have the money, because you got to literally take away my fundamental rights because of your mistake. And then I'm going to find a way to hold them accountable under the, what is that, USC 18 code? Or no, yeah, it's either 42 or 18. Because it's unacceptable. But what's so sad is how many 6,000 people in the database, those are doctors, lawyers, people who spend their lifelong dream on doing stuff, only to not be given the proper, not enough transparency is what I want to call it. Not enough transparency. So that's what I want to show you. So I am on the right track, correct? It's on. Hello? I must have been asleep. Yes.
Oh,
hello?
It's okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Just takes a minute for it to unmute. I got myself muted so that there's no noise here bleeding off what you're saying. But, no, it sounds like you're doing the right thing the way you're challenging them under USC, because that puts you in the federal. Look, they cannot give you relief, and they will not give you relief.
What do you mean?
You have to get it out of the court. When you challenge them under 18 USC, that puts you in the federal courts. That's a different court.
It's going to have to go that because you know why? Let me tell you why. They have
no, you can go directly. I'm not saying that. You can go directly there because it's a constitutional violation. You don't have to go through their stupid appeals process because they've already violated you. What's that?
I didn't know that. I just sent it off today.
We have lots of cases that we've quoted that, and we've quoted the law that says that they're subject to collateral damage. There's lots of Supreme Court rulings.
Wow.
And some state constitutions that actually say that. So, has that information.
Well, you know, you guys are going to have to, I sent my bill off, I sent my pill off just today, but I haven't because I called them first, and they wanted to play dumb. They said, well, and by the way, did you take all this information? And of course it's going to be my correct address. You guys are going to send them to me, and literally, I cannot get a job anywhere. People keep conviction. I can't work in healthcare. And this happened right after I got my master's degree. I have a second degree in theological studies. I can't even teach. She said, well, ma'am, it doesn't affect you. I said, ma'am, you're not out here. You're over the phone. You're not out here. And people see conviction, and that's it. They don't care about your you need to ruin my life. I'm homeless? No, they're going to get it. But I may need someone to help me because, I mean, like, I can sleep well and stuff like that. I mean, I've been really trying to give up on my, you know, knowing how to adjust myself to who I am. Because sometimes in court, there's no need to get scaring you straight. Because they don't want, you know, they want to keep things to worry about. And I don't even know they want to go. I mean, I know there's a list of people. Well, I'm not one of those kind of people that just talk about what I'm doing. I'm about to get busy. Because I'm about sick of them. I'm sick of this society and how they have meticulously put the wool over these people's eyes, and some people want to fight them for it to stay that way.
They
don't believe it. Huh?
Look, it's not easy. You have to keep on plugging, and you got to do the right thing. And it's a lot of work. That's why the average person doesn't want to do it. But I think everything we're doing is going to bolster you. As a matter of fact, some of the things that we end up doing in the court with our cases, you may be able to rest in those things, and you may be able to mention those things. That's what I'm hoping.
Okay.
I'm hoping people will be able to come in and say, look at this case here that you're kicking around that's in court now. I want an extension on mine. I want to stay on mine because until you decide that one, because that one's going to affect me.
Because you know what's going to happen? This is going to be case study. I would not be surprised if they had been breaking the law for 81 years. My God, how many people died in fact, nobody says anything. They just take it. That's unacceptable. That's why things don't change. Actually, that's why things continue to get worse. I talked to a cop the other night. He said, well, I'm going to have you arrested. I said, and on what grounds? Because I'm talking? Disorderly conduct. I said, there's no such thing. They just said, where is there a law that says I can't talk? You can put any fancy name on you want. I still have the right to talk. You don't have the right to tell me nothing. And I'm not being rude. I said, but this is the end thing of what's been going on. And I just kept telling them, you guys take over. They shut up. He said, I have new work. I said, but you know what, really? I can really do it. I don't know. He said, they shut up. But that's the first time because I can't feel tough like that. Because I know I'm doing things. And I don't want them to try to, I'm sure they're going to try to hurt people. Keep them from, being exposed. But I just wanted to know, I'm glad I wanted to pay my dues, but I've been listening to you guys for a long time, for a long, long time. And I just didn't have the money to pay the $5 because of this.
Yeah, well, hold anything back if you don't give us $5.
Okay. Well, no, I really wanted to be able to get in and be a part of this. This is something that has to change.
Right,
you know,
right.
Some people are just, it's all over here, but, you know, people don't believe me, but I was working on a master's degree in theology. I had almost just left and quit. And I thought, because something changed me and made me realize that everything that we live, this whole ground, well, we walk on holy ground, and it's taken a few. Just to control what you have. You know?
Yep.
And so for me, it wasn't worth it. I mean, I'll go back and talk to you, but it's theology that woke me up, that made me realize. Because I realized that the churches are exactly like because they have bodies for a lot. So I just wanted to say thank you guys for being there. And the other thing is, would I have to ask someone, like, go to someone in my area, in Arizona, in Phoenix, and let's say, like, I know there's a thing that, like, when you stay in court, if you don't feel comfortable, you could take someone else with you who's a little bit better well-read.
Cynthia, are you on a headset? I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Yeah, I am on a headset.
I get a lot of background noise, and I get like every third word. It becomes very hard to understand all the words.
Okay, so this is what I want to say. When you guys, is there any like masters, like people who can help you? Maybe better read than maybe myself.
Any? Sorry. What was that word?
They're called masters. They're masters. People who study the common law and they're real good at it. And they're not actually lawyers. They're called masters.
You mean like what's his name? Like Bill Thornton?
Yeah, something like that.
No. Look it. I don't. People are told they can't. At all.
Early morning? No, I
haven't. But look it. Cynthia, I'm going to move on.
What?
There you go. Cynthia, it's so increasingly hard to hear you, so I got Felicia from Florida, but what I wanted to say is you want to know if there's any masters. Well, if there's masters in common law and they're out there and they're practicing, I don't know where they are, and somebody should, you know, if they consider themselves masters, I think we're masters of common law because we've been studying it for a long time and we're using common sense. And, you know, if there's anybody out there that's better than us and more skilled than us, and I'm not saying that there isn't, because we certainly look at every day you learn. And these masters, there's judges that study in common law clubs. I read about them. Now, where are they? You know, they don't even have to bring any new knowledge in. All they have to do, if they're masters, if they were ex-Supreme Court judges, all they got to do is agree with us and say that I agree with them because I am studied in the law. You know what that would do for us? You know, I don't think there's anything we're doing or saying that there's any wrong with it. I don't think we can say it much better. You know what I mean? You know, the only thing is the process of getting them to accept it and forcing them. And there's a strategy and there's process, and you don't always know everything. And so that's where sometimes we can get help, you know. But any common law masters, anybody who was a ex-Supreme Court judge that knows that what we're doing in common law is right on, if he doesn't have something to reveal with us or he can't critique us or warn us of where we have a fatal flaw, which I don't believe we do, but you know what I'm saying. Look, they need to come out and they need to lift us up or correct us or do whatever they think that they need to do, because now's the time. So I don't know that there's any masters. I know there's judges. You know, are they willing to come up and step up to the plate? If they're not willing to step up now, they might, you know, look, they got to step up now or forget about it forever, because that's where we're at. Now is the time. They can't be fritting away, you know, twiddling their thumbs. Anyway, Felicia, go ahead before I take up all the time, and that will put us through everybody in the queue, which hasn't happened in a while. Are you there? Felicia from Florida.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead. You're coming in. You're coming in. Very good.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I told my mother what you guys helped me do, and she told me to tell you, gentlemen, God bless all of you.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Jan, if it wasn't for Mr. Jan instructing me what to do, my house would have been sold on the 14th. I actually contacted, it was being sold online. I contacted them because the realty company that Fannie Mae hired was not hearing what I was trying to say, and they stopped and deleted and removed my house for sale. I did go down to the sheriff's office and told him about it and let him look at the documents, and he told me in order for him to protect me, I had to file a criminal report that a crime has been committed. So I don't know what to do about that.
Well, we should talk about that. He said, in order for him to protect you, well, that's not true anyway. He should be protecting you whenever your unalienable rights are being violated. Now, what he means is if you make a complaint to him and you're willing to go on record to swear out the affidavit, the complaint, because in the law, an affidavit unrebutted is the truth, okay? So if he's a sheriff, will stand behind your affidavit. And he will pursue it. Well, let us at him. You know what I mean?
He directed me. Well, I was directed to a lieutenant for my case, and I actually left them a copy of it. And I asked him if he read it. He said no. And I said, well, you're supposed to protect me from these criminals. And he said, well, if a crime was committed, you need to actually come down to the courthouse and actually file something in order for us to protect you.
So what you need an affidavit is what he's telling you.
And the affidavit is in there.
Yeah, but he wants you to swear out a sworn complaint. Apparently, that's what I'm thinking, that he wants you to actually make a complaint to him that this is what they did to you. And believe me, he will serve them with the paper. He has no problem doing that because this guy understands that that's his job. That if you come down with a sworn complaint, he has no choice but to serve it on them. And, of course, that's going to bring them back answering you with their stupid answers, but that should be interesting anyway. You know what I mean?
Go ahead.
Get your due process and that they don't skip over you and steamroll you in and try to do things before you have a chance to answer, but go ahead.
What I also did is I also went down to the courthouse and had it stamped and submitted that to the very first foreclosure case that I had.
Right. Well, that was good. That was smart.
But he said in order for them to protect me from them trying to evict me, and he was like, did you get eviction papers there? I was like, no. And he said, well, you need to actually come down and file a complaint that a crime was actually committed before we can protect you.
All right.
Those were his words.
Well,
do I have to do another affidavit and submit it to them?
Well, I'm thinking that's what he wants, yes, actually. And before you do that, you should get a hold of, we should work with you on this.
Okay.
I want to go over it right now, but we should talk about how you do this and why you do it. You need to be clear in your head so that when you go there, you can talk a little bit intelligently about it, which I know you can. You seem to be perfectly capable. So we'll just give you a couple of pointers and brush you up on the finer stuff of it because it's actually simple because it's common law. You'll get it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about, let me see, maybe I can get Harley or John and Harley. I'm setting up a way of meeting with these guys more on the fly because I've been very busy on the fly. But there's a lot of stuff that we can do on people's cases if we all get connected on the fly with system that we can, you know, what do you call it? Rely on, because we have a lot of trouble. I got April Esposito that says she can help you with your question. So listen, I'm going to unmute her.
Okay.
Let her.
Hi, how y'all doing?
Okay.
Hey, April, how are you going?
I'm back in action again. I wanted to let y'all know I have recouped, but I was listening to her question, and I'm so glad for your success, Felicia. I just happen to be going through papers here as I'm listening to the call, and I have this letter of instruction that you received, right? Did you receive that?
No, ma'am, I did not.
Okay, this letter of instruction I came across, it's from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and it says, your petition with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury for assistance in reporting a crime, in response and information reporting, an information reporting a crime of non-judicial foreclosure has been sent to your sheriff, which explains the ruse that attempts to rob you of your property as opposed to a seizure of property under due process, which foreclosure by due process was not done in this case simply because it could not be done. This letter of instruction details how you are to proceed. We are copying the sheriff. Once you receive the information, you will know your sheriff received it. Please allow the sheriff 1 week from the day of receipt to receive the information and conduct his investigation. If, however, you have a notice of eviction or sale before then, you may proceed immediately. Call your sheriff to inquire, did you receive the document for which I petitioned the grand jury? Do you understand the crime you committed? Do you intend to protect
Not
me?
Really.
And if the foreclosing agents want my property, let them go through due process in the court. Then it says, when you call the sheriff's office, be sure not to talk with the deputy or anyone else in the sheriff's office. If you are unable to speak directly with the sheriff, leave a message. If you are asked if the matter is personal, respond thusly. This is not a personal matter. The sheriff is an elected individual. The sheriff is a constitutional law enforcement officer in the county. I have an unalienable right to speak with my sheriff. Then it says, NLA will greatly appreciate your reporting any success you receive. We are interested in knowing of the sheriff's willingness to defend the unalienable rights of their constituents.
I'm under a lot of stress. You have no idea. Well,
you're apparently doing something right if you succeeded, and that's what we want to hear. We want to hear the success cases.
I'm under a lot of stress. My sister died of breast cancer. My mom got skin cancer. You know, and then I've been going through this, battling this for years. I went from $50,000 to zero in one day. I was unemployed most of the time. And right now I have student loan taking money out of my account off my card before I even get paid. And they're not even documenting the money that they're taking out. So, you know, it's like I'm stuck with $200 a week. And I'm trying to survive off that.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
you know, they try to give me $21 a month in food stamps. You know, it's like, really? You know, so I have people bring me food to eat. So I'm trying to survive it.
Well, you're definitely being my prayers, and I'm sure a lot of other NLA members' prayers.
So, you know, like when I contacted, you know, Mark Emery's page, and, you know, I got in contact with NLA. It's like, you know, I've learned a lot from the Constitution, and I was the one that asked the questions to tonight about the UCC and the IRS, mm-hmm. because I don't fully understand, and that's why I'm there, to fully understand. So if anybody can actually, you know, contact me with my questions so that I fully understand, because basically, you know, it's a class. And this, I haven't learned this in college. I didn't learn it in high school. I went to business school. They didn't teach me any of this. So, you know, I'm fresh to learning all this stuff. So I need to actually fully understand. Ma'am?
Have you finished the civics course yet?
Well, I started the civics course, and then I took like a few weeks off because I found out, you know, everybody's telling me, oh, your house for sale, and that put me under a lot of stress, so it kind of hit me back. So well, when I went back on there.
It might benefit you to finish it now because it will answer.
No, I'm back on the civics course. I'm back on the civics course, but I finished phase one. But then phase two took me to Constitutional 2, so I did a video today, and that's the reason, watch the whole video. I have to go to the library to watch it because I don't really have internet, and then when I do it with my phone, you know, it's a lot going on with a little phone. So, that's why I asked the questions that I did today because I really didn't fully understand because I was never taught it.
Yeah, it'll definitely benefit you to finish the civics because I found when I finished the civics course, it answered a lot of questions that I didn't even know I had. So by the time you get to the end of it, you're going to have a lot of questions answered. And while you're watching it, I recommend taking notes. So this way, things that are important to you, you have at hand.
No, like literally, like when I do that. So, I had to pause today at the library, and that's when I sent them my questions. So-and-so. So how does this relate to 1776 and 1302? And, I don't fully understand it. That's why I asked the questions.
Yeah, it will answer more and more questions that as you get deeper into the course. You'll get more and more questions answered. I promise you that, because it was very informational to me.
Well, it's very informational to me as well.
Yes.
We have books on there that you can read also. It's very good advice to finish that course first so that you have a grounding, so that when you see the other stuff, you'll already know it, But there's lots of good videos that were done on that subject. I mean, if you want to get really up on it quickly, there's some ones that don't go crazy with it, and they give you a very basic, why and where, and you'll get it. And you should watch those. Maybe make a list of those or something for you. But I know that we have them on our site. You know what I mean? I know that we've had them archived, and I know they're there.
You guys have phone service. Have you ever considered internet?
What do you mean?
Because when I looked on there, you have the phone call service that you can purchase, but have you guys considered internet as well?
Oh, that phone call system is just phones that it's called a follow me phone for people that want, their phone to roll forward and do all this stuff, and it's very good. It's good for NLA. It's good for business. It's you can change your number. You can do a lot of stuff. If you're a person that's on the phone a lot, or even on the internet, and you're backing it up with phone, that's a phone that gives you a lot of options to change what it does for you. The follow me phone, and you can have it roll to this phone or that phone, and just the way it keeps messages, and it just organizes you. But that's not, we're on the internet with the website, and basically the internet is our biggest thing.
Right.
Everything goes out on the internet. I mean, we did faxes too, but really the internet is what makes us or breaks us, and that's why we're getting into NLA news and getting into the social media to get our word.
But also, emailed a copy to the local realty company that put my house for sale on auction.com, and it's funny how today I actually got a call from Fannie Mae.
And
it was like, let me know if, this is so-and-so, you can reach me at this extension, let me know if I can help you. Or you're trying to help now after you don't stole my house and tried to sell it.
Be careful. I can tell you, be careful.
Yeah, I said that in my mind, though. I haven't returned a call, and I'm not going to return a call.
Well, I wouldn't return a call unless you have somebody with you that's very savvy on their feet. You know what I mean? Because that person, you don't have to answer those questions, and you can ask certain questions. And if they're not going to be forthcoming, they roll back right away. They'll want to get off the phone. They won't want to continue if you conduct yourself in the right way and ask the right questions. They're not gonna hang themselves. You know what I mean?
Well, I've been hung up on, and so far this is my third representative that's want to talk to me. So I guess the first guy didn't want to talk, and then it got me, you know, gave my case to somebody else, and I have somebody else.
I don't know.
I'm not going to return a call. So it's like, you know, I'm sure, you know, the people that you hired or paying to do this little thing that you did to try to kick me and make me homeless, I'm sure they gave you the information and spoke to you and how my house was taken off auction.com. It was at $154,000, and they closed it and removed it. And I was able to stop that from the directions Mr. Jan told me to do. So, you know, I'm happy about that. Even though my air conditioner is broke. My air conditioner is broken. I'm in the heat, but, you know, I still have my house.
Yeah, well, that's good. And you're not done. You got to keep going. I know you know that, but you're putting up a good fight. And we'll talk. You know, make sure you send the stuff into NLA so that we can get you those papers to get to the sheriff. You know, and start
so
that process.
So what papers into NLA?
We've got to just fill out, you know, where the little smiley face is. Go in and fill out an application where we help. Or have you done that already?
Fill out an app. Yeah, I'm a member already.
No, not a member. Not a member.
Yeah, I am a member.
No. I mean, there's this place where you go to get help on foreclosures. On the side of every web page, you'll see the little frowny face, and you put your cursor on it, and then you pick the one. It says non-judicial foreclosure. You click on that and follow the instructions and fill the paperwork out that we ask you to do and send it to us. And they're going to ask you to explain where you are in this, that you're facing a foreclosure and all that stuff too. That way
you mean the intake form,
Gerard?
Yeah, she's
done all that.
I've already did that.
We filed all the forms for her already.
Oh, we did
last week. Yep. She's way ahead of the game.
Okay, so the sheriff would have been getting them by. We sent them to the sheriff, or we sent them.
I think they went out last week to everybody.
Right.
I received it on the 13th, and Mr. Jan told me, he said, you need to go down there right now. You need to do this right now. And I did that, and it stopped them from selling my house.
Right. So now you got to continue.
Okay.
So when you get something from us like that, it's in your paperwork, just photocopy it for the sheriff. Give him another, you didn't get that. Here's a copy. You know what I mean?
I did that. Yeah. And he told me I need to come down. If it was a crime committed in order for them to protect me, then I need to come fill something out, is what he told me.
Well, that's what we need to talk about, that next scenario. We got to get on a phone conversation with you. I'll talk to John and a couple other people, see what the best way for that is.
Well, I'm off tomorrow. Yes, sir.
Because basically that's what we're doing anyway. You know, if you listen to that paper, that's what you're doing when you file the thing, you know? So you're already there.
Yeah.
But we'll discuss.
I asked him if he read it. He told me no.
Yeah, well, did he get it?
Yeah. He asked, it was forwarded to the lieutenant, not the sheriff. And I asked him if he read it. He told me no. He said, but if I wanted to report a crime has been committed, then I need to come down and fill out a report that a crime has been committed.
Right.
That's where I am right now.
I suppose you could have told them I did that. That's what the paperwork is.
That's what I told them. I said my affidavit's in there.
Yeah, he doesn't understand.
No, I said I don't.
Sometimes you got to get somebody else to talk to him. But we'll talk about that because, look, we've been on phone calls with sheriffs and different people to set them straight as far as what their duty is, you know. And if you already filled it out, you filled it out. And then, I mean, I'll come down and do another one, but I want this one to stand from the common law grand jury. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Because that says a lot. I was like, wow, look at all this stuff. They did all this to me? I didn't know that. Oh, wow. Jeez. What?
Well, anyway, you got a good spirit. You're a good fighter. You're still up. So I could tell you like a good fight. So do a good job, and we'll help you the best we can. Okay?
Yes, sir. I have two more questions. One is my neighbor was foreclosed on, and her house was sold, and I'm trying to find her number through my old cell phones. Is there any way for her to get her house back? Do I need to get her into contact with you guys? Because her house was also in a judicial foreclosure.
Right, and you can go after them after the fact because it was fraud. And she could fill the paperwork out and start the case and do that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can prove, you know, look, they used to make it so that you could redeem property that tax sale, like, you know, for 7 years. And of course, nobody wanted to buy it because the owner could come back. Of course, you have to pay you for any improvements you made. But if they take your house and it's unlawful, you absolutely could go back after them. It's always harder once you let go, you know what I mean, after the fact.
She gave up.
Yeah, it's the thing is depends on how much they broke her. You may not want to put this on her. If she's
she basically lost her home and she lives in an apartment now.
Yeah, well,
and she had this house built too.
Okay.
Like I did.
Let me ask. You got to ask: is she broken or is she really, really ticked off? That's what I would ask first, because you know. In order for her to get it back, she's got to do a fight. I mean, this is a big fight. It's not easy. You got to be into it. Look, you're over there struggling with food and this and that and then doing this. I mean, my goodness, you know, and then to go and get one back is even, you know, it's even more work because you got to work your way through it, you know.
I can try to help her, but I have to learn the process myself because this is all new to me.
Right. Well, you'll get it. You'll get it. It'll go in just like osmosis. But anyway.
One more question. Well, it's not more of a question. It's more of an answer. One guy was talking about MK Ultra, and I fully understand that. And the mind programming, people need to understand that without saying too much, because I was mentored by a former astronaut. There's a shield around the planet Earth, and they send electric magnetic pulses through the elf towers. And if you notice, a lot of those towers, they're called elf towers. They're sending out electric magnetic pulses, and they're changing people's frequencies, how they feel, how they think, and it's affecting their health. And most of these, what people think are cell phone towers, are called elf towers, and most of them are downtown next to a judge, next to a courthouse.
No kidding.
And they also sending these electromagnetic pulses and changing people's frequencies through television. I call it television because they're manipulating people into believing things that's not really true. They're like programming people. So, you know, I understand what he was saying about the MK Ultra and the programming, and in the end, that creates Manchurian candidates, and this is why all these crimes are going on, because they're creating it. And these people, they're creating order out of chaos. And my mentor, former mentor from NASA, he would write things down. He would never tell me. I would ask him questions, and he would never, and, you know, that guy, he was talking about the NSA, but, you know, to my mind, when I sit down to a former NASA astronaut and he mentored me for 2 years and there's nobody around, and I ask him a question and he said he can't answer, and I'm like, why? Nobody's around. And he said, because they see us and hear us. So I can't say, I'm not going to jeopardize this because I know so-and-so and so-and-so and blah, 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 blah. And I'm not going to, you know, say too much. But, you know,
they're watching. If you say it on here, they'll definitely see it and hear it because they have control of these waves. Don't ever
the satellites can, if you hold a penny in your hand outside at midnight, they can zoom in and see the penny and see what year it is. So, so really, I don't have any secrets. So I can't have any secrets because I'm sure they know there's so many satellites around here, you know, and, you know, you take somebody, you know, like whistleblowers, like a few weeks ago, another whistleblower came out, and I'm not talking about Edward. He exposed that, and he's sitting over there in Russia.
Right.
But, you know, it's a lot going on that a lot of people don't know, and, you know, unfortunately, I helped the old man, you know, because able-bodied people wouldn't even help him, and to find out who he was, and for him to not just tell me things, and I used to laugh at him, and then he would show me. Like, he has letters from George Carlin. He has letters from John Wayne. When I seen the letter from John Wayne, I was like, no, are you serious? And he's like 80-something years old, so, you know, he was a space shuttle operator here in Florida at NASA. So, you know, they can listen to this phone call. They already know. They can listen to it, but, you know, somebody's listening to them.
Well,
that's the way I see it.
That's right.
Well, I ain't going to, you know, go too much into that.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot. I mean, like, this man put a lot on me.
I, you know, wanted to know what the truth was. I started reading the Bible more because I grew up in a church, Seventh-day Adventist. And, you know, when I fell down and tried to bring myself back up, I went back to God. And I just happened to meet this man. And he told me a lot of things, and he put a lot of burden. It's almost a burden because, you know, I didn't want to open up that too much can of worms to know. You know, I was good with scripture. He put a lot, and there's a lot going on that a lot of people don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I, you know, it's just a lot, but I'm just going to stop right there before I start saying too much.
Well, I don't even
but
want
anyhow.
To know it. I know there's more going on than I even want to know about.
Yeah, I didn't want to know all that either.
My plate is full, and I can't even begin to imagine what else is going on. But every day, unfortunately, I discover something else in spite of the fact that I don't want to know. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, it's way deeper than anybody can even believe. And that's why I think it says in the Bible, unless these days be shortened, no flesh shall survive. Because
it's unbelievable.
Deep into everything, and they have such technology that we don't even know they have. I mean, well,
I know.
They have, and I'm baffled by what they have now. Oh, you know, but they got other stuff.
Oh, this is nothing. Even Errol Jetson had smartphones. He had a cell phone watch in the 60s. They had 3D TVs. They had VCRs. They had CD players. They had flat screen TVs. They had that in the 60s, and now we're at 2017. I mean, this is nothing new to them. They're giving us old technology because I don't think that we can handle that technology. From what I've seen and what I've heard, we can't handle that.
They want to mix man and machine. They want to clone man and machine together. And they're this is a new Tower of Babel. But look, it's getting late. I want to go. We're over time. It's been great. Keep up the fight and get a hold of one of the NLA people. I'll put some word out there for you, okay, for your next step.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Yeah.